Tonight, we interview producer, composer, and artist Kyle Ward. Kyle has been involved with a myriad of rhythm games in the arcade, consoles for fitness, as well as mobile devices. We'll take your questions in chat and round out this week's gaming news, all starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight on May the 3rd of 2015 with episode number 596 of our program. My name is Rob Roberts, here with you in studio with my awesome co-hosts. Say hello first off to Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good, excellent. I accidentally gave away one of your beta keys in the chat room earlier.
Oh, well.
you wanted a beta key that I had for, and I'll just say now, it's pointless. I might as well say at this point, it was a Heroes of the Storm beta key, which I had a bunch of them in my email, and I just had it on the clipboard. And there were some server changes at VOG this week, so I thought what I had on the clipboard was the new listen link for people that had the wrong thing bookmarked. So I just pasted it, and oops, there went Jamie's Hero of the Storm key I just posted right there in the chat room for everybody to see.
I have a replacement, so it's all good.
Yeah, it's like I was
as soon as I can get my authenticator problem fixed.
Yeah, I couldn't find people that wanted them. I'm glad you can get some use out of that. So yay!
I just have to get my authenticator problem fixed that I was yelling about.
When was the last time you played a Blizzard game? It's probably been a long time, huh?
When did I quit WoW?
When Final Fantasy XIV came out, probably, which was what, like a year and a half ago?
Something like that?
Yeah, a long time ago. Anyway, also joining us on here in studio, say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't bring food tonight. Usually we like to play the guessing game, what did Loki bring tonight? But you really surprised us. You decided to cook at home?
No, I went to a restaurant.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, I went. And got Red Robin.
Fair enough.
So I got hamburger.
This week, big Loki news. You got your Oculus Rift, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
So I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit in the gaming weeks. But how's the Oculus Rift going over at home?
Pretty good. My son's been monopolizing all the time with it, so he's been riding roller coaster simulators. So he likes that. He was surprised the other day because he was playing Lego Marvel Super Heroes and then is playing the Oculus Rift. So he took a break from the Oculus Rift to play Lego Marvel Super Heroes and went back to the roller coaster, and he didn't realize that there's like a, you know, they actually have a time of day cycle that goes through there, and it was nighttime when he went back there. He's like, what? But it was daytime earlier. You know, he's like, why is it nighttime? I don't know.
Now, I don't want to be that guy, but I can't help it. If you're not supposed to play a 3DS until you're 7, like, you got to limit the Oculus Rift stuff, right? For a kid?
Well, no. I mean, I don't think so. It's I don't know.
As long as he's not spending all day in there, I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, he likes riding all the roller coasters and stuff.
Yeah.
He didn't want to try it at first, but then I convinced him to do it, and now he likes it. Mm-hmm. How it works. I don't know.
There you go. All right, we'll talk more about some of the specifics there later on. But I do want to mention, of course, the three of us here in studio are always joined by you guys in our chat room, because we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network, VOGNetwork.com, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf Show. And if you want to join us live tonight, you can head on over to our website, live.vognetwork.com. And that's the place where you can join in on the show. We do have a special guest joining us tonight, and I was mentioning on Bobby's show a little bit ago, this is a guest that really we probably should have had on the show like 10 years ago, and I feel like we've been talking for a long, long time to try to make it work, but we kind of reconnected with this guy when I was at PAX East, and I know he has some new games that he just put out there, so we finally, after much anticipation, are getting on this show, Kyle Ward. Who is the creator of some very popular music games on Android right now, because they just came out and they're doing very well on the rankings, Re-Rave Plus, as well as Ditto Beat. So we're going to talk to him about both of those games tonight, and we'll talk to him about some of the things he's been involved with in the past, like a little dance game you probably heard us talk about a long time ago called In the Groove. So we will, he said we can ask present, past, future, whatever. So you guys are going to help us out with that. So if you have questions for Kyle, make sure you're in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. And somebody also pointed out there's definitely like a 6 degrees of OLR thing going on here. Okay, so YYR, who's in our chat right now, by the way, you know YYR. He's made some great OLR like dream games, right? He made Bungee Ferret Tossing, like a legit like Xbox indie arcade release, one of our dream games. He made Bungee Ferret Tossing. That's there. He also did Pixel Shits, which was the recent one, right? And that got a lot of people.
You're welcome.
Yeah, right? So there was that. Well, here's the 6 degrees of OLR thing. So YYR also did Snake 360. That was like one of his first like XNA and Xbox Live indie game things that he did. And Kyle did the music that was in Snake 360. So how about that? How about that? 6 degrees of OLR right there. So maybe I'll have to ask Kyle. Just I got to sneak in one question about Snake 360. Just because we love YYR. So there you go. If you want to ask some questions, get on over to our chat room, live.vognetwork.com. If this is your first time listening to OLR, because this is really funny. So, you know, obviously with DDR having kind of, you know, gone off into the sunset, I know it's still around and everything, and I'm going to piss somebody off by saying that, but let's be real. It's kind of not, you know, at the level it certainly used to be 10 years ago, 13 years ago when we started this show. So people have kind of gone off, and people that are music game fans have flocked to all these other, you know, places. So obviously Kyle, having created some of these really cool music games, he has a lot of, you know, music game fans and people that used to play, you know, a lot of the same games we did back in the day. So when Kyle was promoting this show and his appearance on the show, I noticed there were several people that were commenting, that show's still around? Wait, OLR is still a thing?
We get that often.
Yeah, I know. It's like, yeah.
Actually, no, they don't
get that a lot.
Who?
Yeah, who? Who's that? Orange Lounge. How's that? What's that have to do with gaming? So if this is your first time listening, or your first time in a long time listening to OLR, we are, of course, three pals who all met, and we did meet actually playing DDR, Beatmania, Parappa the Rappa, Bust a Move, Groove, whatever country. We used to play all those old school music games together because you know that music gaming used to be somewhat of a cult. Not like we're all going to drink Kool-Aid, but it was definitely like a very niche fandom, and we all would gather on places like DDR Freak and Bomani Style and so forth, and there'd be tournaments. So for a long time, we had this show that was really dedicated to that scene. And, well, probably around, you know, the same time podcasting really took off in 2006, 2007, we thought, you know, since there's less and less competitive music gaming going on right now, because this was right at the dip before then Guitar Hero 2 and Rock Band and kind of made a revival there, we decided to expand our horizons to all video games. So we kind of imagine ourselves, you know, we're like at the dinner table at the diner after a long day at the arcade playing some of our favorite games, and now we're going to eat some mozzarella sticks and talk some smack about video games. And we invite all of you to do that and lend your voices to the conversation here at Orange Lounge Radio. So that's us in a nutshell. If you need to be reoriented, because it's been 9 years since you've listened to OLR, just so you know, quite a long time ago we expanded the thing, and it's about all video games now. But of course, we always are going to have a soft spot in our heart for music-based games. So we'll get into talking about those a little later when Kyle joins us. But first, let's get into the kickoff topic. I want to do some follow-ups for the kickoff topic tonight, because there's two big ones. And we had two big stories last week. And so, and then after we do the kickoff topic, of course, we'll get into our gaming weeks and all that good stuff. But for the kickoff topic tonight, I want to talk about two follow-ups. One, remember last week we talked about the mod sales on Steam and how this was a big part of the Fugle question of the week. You could now actually charge for mods on Steam, and obviously this is very controversial for several reasons. One was that the mod makers were getting a very small cut of the pie, all things considered. Another, that we had an issue where, you know, a mod maker had allegedly taken a bunch of assets from another mod maker and then was selling it, and that was all ugly, right? Well, long story short, this week Steam said, you know what? Made a mistake and got rid of it and refunded the money and essentially said, and I'm paraphrasing here, we didn't know what we were getting into. So that's it. That's done. That's gone. So what do you guys think hearing that? That the mod thing just went out as quick as it came in.
Good.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
It was a dumb idea to begin with.
Yeah. I can see where, like, from the, you know, and I mentioned this a little bit last week, from the capitalist side of things, like, where from the perspective of Steam and Bethesda, like, to open up a different type of app store, a mod store, like, could have been this whole new marketplace. But it just, I don't know, it's hard to launch something like that for something that already has a very extensively established mod community. And, you know, a lot of these mod makers are getting donations and so forth from other places, and so they don't necessarily want to share, you know, as much as they wanted. So it was just a mess. So who maybe that petition they actually had out there ended up working in this whole thing. So then there was another big story last week, huge story, and that was about what the hell's going on with the new Silent Hill game. And lots of talk about how Guillermo del Toro basically said it's not happening. Hideo Kojima hadn't really commented on it officially, but we knew that him and Konami were getting a divorce, so it probably wasn't happening. And then Norman Reedus basically said it's not happening. Well, the follow-up this week, Konami saying it's not happening. Konami released an official statement this week saying Konami is committed to new Silent Hill titles. However, the embryonic Silent Hills project developed with Guillermo del Toro and featuring the likeness of Norman Reedus will not be continued. In terms of Kojima and del Toro being involved, discussions on future Silent Hill projects are currently underway. Please stay tuned for further announcements. So in other words,
please understand.
Please look forward to it. There is something Silent Hill likely happening in the future. Konami isn't saying we're letting it go.
Well, I fully look forward to the Silent Hill pachinko and gambling machines.
No. It's this, please don't hate us. I'm sorry. We'll make it better. I promise.
Please look forward to the mobile experience of Silent Hill.
Oh, boo.
The Pyramid Head Chase. Endless Runner coming.
I am going to set some bitches on fire.
So even though Silent Hill isn't done, this is done, which is, you know, obviously extraordinarily disappointing.
No, we're all done.
And just a little follow-up, PT, if you forgot to grab that from the store, you missed out. We warned you last week to get it.
At least I bought it.
And it's gone. It's gone. Well, here's the good news. Some tests have been run after the fact, and if you had PT flagged on your account, you can still get it. The file is not gone from the servers. So if you did go in and at least like download it on the Sony store or whatever and it's flagged on your account, you will have that until they delete that file from the servers, when who knows what that'll be.
And then I'll figure out a way to copy it off of someone's hard drive.
Well, some people are just straight up. It's like when that one guy stopped making Flappy Bird, right?
Yeah.
Then all the phones showed up on eBay. You know, iPhone with Flappy Bird. And now what's happening? PlayStation 4 with PT going on eBay. It's like, oh, God, gag me.
Well, yeah, they put it up there for a really high amount. And if no one buys it, oh, well. If someone buys it, hey, cool, I made a lot of money.
Going to a comment from our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. SSGO100 Matt, paraphrasing the Konami statement, saying, quote, sorry we canceled that thing you wanted. Here's a cookie. Sorry we only have oatmeal. Hey, I like oatmeal.
Oatmeal cookies are great, but if they have raisins in them, screw you.
Raisins are disgusting. The oatmeal raisin cookies that look like chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
And then you bite into them thinking that they're chocolate chip. Exactly. What the fuck? This is a raisin.
It's exactly. I don't mind.
And raisins are made by the devil.
I don't mind oatmeal raisin cookies at all, but I need them to be clearly labeled. Like, do not be playing that I'm a chocolate chip cookie in disguise thing.
No, raisins were made by the devil and I will not touch them.
You really hate me. All they are dried grapes. You drink wine.
I like grapes. I like wine. Raisins are the devil.
I don't get
it. I like
raisins.
I love raisins, actually. I like oatmeal cookies, but I don't want raisins in my oatmeal cookies.
You know what the best is?
If there's raisins in my carrot. Now, cranberries are good.
Craisins. That's what they're
called. Those are good.
Yeah.
But grapes just take on this horrible, like, not really should be existing in the universe. Except there is a wine that I like that is effectively made from raisins. And that's the, I'm going to mispronounce it, a Sauternes. That's made when the grapes dry on the vine, and then they make the wine from that.
SSJ100 Matt is clarifying that what Loki said with it is what I was going for in my quote. So the fact that it was chocolate chip cookie in disguise. We were getting delicious. We were all ready for that sugary, sweet chocolate, and then you bite into the cookie, and it's a raisin.
Or it's going to be like, hell yes, we were totally expecting awesome, you know, Silent Hills game. It's going to be high production value. But we're just going to get, like, what was it, that Wii Silent Hill game again.
Raginator in chat says, raisins are candy for damn hippies.
Sauternes, I think.
Guybrush Threepwood wants to know, how long until the demo is pirated? That's like asking how long until X ends up on the internet, or how long until there's fanfic written about X. It's already being pirated, I'm sure. It's just a matter of time. Let's see. Rama wants to know, saying, if you buy a PlayStation 4 with the demo, can you play it? Won't it be tied to the previous account or something?
Possibly, but at the same time, though, I think those still work for a little bit.
I believe the way the PlayStation thing works is and I could be wrong, so don't quote me on this. But I believe if you are playing it on the console it was originally downloaded to, then you can play it with any gamer tag on that original device. But then, like, let's say that PlayStation 4 bricks someday and you have to get a new one, you can't get that again. So that's gonna be a problem. And if, like, I could sign into my PlayStation account and download the PT demo on someone else's PlayStation 4, but they're not going to be able to play it because that wasn't the original PlayStation 4 it was downloaded to. It's only going to work.
I don't know if that's the case with demos, but maybe.
Yeah, and that's that's the thing. That's how it works for paid games, but I don't know about demos.
Like back in the day for the Xbox 360, you used to be able to burn demo discs and then be able to just pop them in because, you know, demos weren't locked in anyway.
Dungeon Buster pointing out, you can install a demo for all users. I have Japanese demos from another account I made just for those. That's right. There are a lot of people that do that, that use, you know, they'll have two accounts because they want to download Japanese demos.
I still have my Japanese account.
Yeah. Or the themes. Like, there's an awesome Final Fantasy 14 theme on the Japanese store. Nowhere to be found on this one. I don't know why, but that's the way it is. So anyway, there went Silent Hills, officially canceled by Konami this past week. And of course, much like there was the petition for mods to be removed from Steam, what showed up, y'all? A petition. There is a petition out there asking Konami to continue development on Silent Hills. Bring this collaboration with Guillermo del Toro back. And let's see, I'm trying to see how many people have actually signed this petition at where else, change.org.
Change.org is the worst because you get all these emails whenever you've signed anything on them.
They are 50 supporters shy of 70,000. So you know what? If all the people listening sign this petition, then
you'd still need 25 more.
They will be 47 signatures short of 70,000, but they're just short of 70,000 at this time, and it's actually not petitioning Konami, it's petitioning Kojima and Del Toro, please work on Silent Hills. So here's the interesting, I have to ask this question. Obviously, Hideo Kojima is going to go off and do his own thing. You know, once this divorce with Konami goes through and the dust settles and all that, Kojima's not going to just retire to a desert island. At least I don't think. I mean, I guess he could, and he'd deserve to. But I would think he's going to either go off and do his own thing, which a lot of people seem to do these days. It seems to be the very popular thing to do. Start your own studio and go to Kickstarter. Or he'll ally with another company. So what's to say that he won't still make a scary game, and he could still make a scary game with Guillermo del Toro? Might not be able to have Norman Reedus involved. That could be the whole contracts and everything. There might be a lock on that, so I wouldn't expect. But there's no reason Kojima and Del Toro couldn't collaborate on a scary game. It just wouldn't be able to be Silent Hill be something else.
Yamaoka went on to do Shadows of the Damned with who else? Who was the director on that one?
That was the whole Platinum, right? That did that, wasn't it? Or am I?
I'm trying to remember who the designer was though for that one, But, I mean, it's happened before. That was a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sort of was like the best stuff that I would have expected out of maybe Devil May Cry meets a little bit of Silent Hill.
Right. Dungeon Buster in chat saying Level 13 invited Kojima to work for them. Not sure if serious. I think a lot of people would be very excited to have Kojima working for them. So
we should see if we can hire Kojima for pizza.
You know, I agree with YYR. If anything, though, I'd expect Kojima to start something on his own, and that's what I fully expect to happen as well, is that he's going to end up starting his own thing and go to Kickstarter. Because can you imagine? What if he basically said, we're going to make a new game that's a spiritual successor to PT, wink, and Guillermo del Toro's involved, wink, give me some money, handout. He'll have $5 million in 24 hours.
Silent Valley, Ranma. You know what? I actually just had a great idea. We should start a change.org petition to have Akira Yamaoka make our new theme for our show.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? Game Geeks in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com says, I just want them to make Elvira's Silent Hills game. Yes, yes, fuck yes. Please. Who has to be slept with to make that happen? Let's get going on it.
By the way,
while Elvira is still kicking, come on, let's do it.
Completely unrelated to Silent Hill or Elvira, I did send something your way earlier that you should be super excited about.
What's that?
An absolutely fabulous movie.
Oh yes. Oh, you know what's so funny? That thing's been on my Facebook like 7 times this week. But I appreciate that, and I said this to the last person to post it. I appreciate that. People thinking of Adina and Patsy makes them think of me. I can appreciate that.
What about Fabulous Hill? Ab Fab Hill.
I'm just going to drink, sweetie darling, until I collapse, and then I'm going to see things, darling, sweetie. They pop specs, and I use them to see the ghosts. The pops.
Yep. And then you actually, your health meter is in terms of peckishness. When you have to stop and eat something, it's game over.
Love it. All right. One other thing I want to mention, and this is very interesting, and I think the timing of this whole thing could be very relevant. The same day all this hit the fan, and all this news was coming out about Silent Hills, which I believe was Monday, that same day, guess what? A teaser went out for another highly anticipated scary game. Five Nights at Freddy's 4 was confirmed with a teaser image that says the final chapter... Five Nights at Freddy's... Well, it doesn't say Five Nights at Freddy's 4. It just has the, you know, Freddy Fazbear picture, and it looks really disturbing. And says, the final chapter, 10/31/15. So a Halloween release for Five Nights at Freddy's 4. Coincidence? Announced the same day that one scary game goes away, another one comes in? I don't know. Jamie, you follow the quote-unquote mythos of Five Nights at Freddy's a little closer than I do. I had the feeling that 3 was kind of supposed to be the last one. Are you surprised that there is a 4 and
nope.
final chapter coming?
Why money, is that? Money, money. They like money. Well, I mean, honestly, I think that I'm going to put this the way I am about fan fiction. Because as you know, I have been obsessively writing Dragon Age fan fiction. You get out of a story and people like it. So you do a sequel to it because people still want to read your writing. And then you want to see where it goes. Screw, you know what, I mean, I love all the people who are reading what I'm writing. But at the same time, I'm like, I want more. I want to see what happens next. And then it's like, oh my God, I can't stop. And then just when you think you're at the verge of being able to stop, you've got that last nail in the coffin. I really like your story. Fine, I'll write some more. I have a feeling that it's like that with Five Nights at Freddy's.
Now, going to our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com, there's a few comments on this. Rama says, I call collusion on that. Dungeon Master says, coincidence or good marketing? And Tiger Claw says something very similar to what I'm thinking. Tiger Claw says, yes, the final chapter. Then that game ends up making a ton more money. And then Five Nights at Fry's? I think he combined words there. Five Nights at Freddy's 5, the next generation.
A reunion episode.
Yeah, exactly. Right, back to the
more murder.
More murder.
They basically take the Five Nights at Freddy's and do a spinoff from another great, you know, murderous tragedy in the same little world that exists in.
And you know, not that I am the creator or want to get too far in his head or whatever. But maybe you're actually not too far off base. Is that maybe he wants to do something else. Like, he doesn't want to do nothing but Five Nights at Freddy's for the rest of his life, but maybe there's another story out there he wants to tell, be it based on fact or fiction.
Maybe we can have the saga of the purple guy.
All right. Anyway, let's move on, because as I promised a few minutes ago, we have a really big interview on tonight's show, and we're going to get him on the line. And tonight, we're going to be talking to Kyle Ward. And if you've heard of games like, oh, I don't know, In the Groove, or Re-Rave, Re-Rave Plus, Ditto beat. You've Pump It Up. You've probably heard Kyle's song or been exposed to his work in one way or another. So you know we're big fans of music gaming here at OLR. So this has been a long time coming that we are going to get Kyle on the show tonight. So we're going to give him a call right now and get him on the show here at Orange Lounge Radio. And if you have questions, of course, be sure to join our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. But it's my pleasure to welcome to the show right now, Kyle Ward. You there?
Yes, I'm here. How's it going?
It is going fantastically. Thank you so much for taking the time out to join our show tonight.
Oh, absolutely. I love you guys. I remember this station back in the DDR Maniacs days, and it was a big part of my life too when I started playing these silly dance games.
It's so funny, and I don't know if you heard when I was telling this story earlier, but you know, you were promoting your appearance here on the show on your Facebook. Thank you, by the way. And there was a lot of comments that said, "Wait, that's still around?" And I can't help but kind of laugh at that, but in like a good way, as it's like,
I know, right?
You know, yeah, it's
yeah.
Kind
of course, you guys are still around. Is you just kind of you've broadened your horizons a little bit now, like most music gamers from back in the day,
right? Well, you know,
and it's outstanding.
I think we just had that discovery that it's like we just love video games. Period. Music games are just what we're into right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's always going to be that soft spot in my heart for music video games. So that's why I like totally love what you're doing to keep it going, you know. And I've told you this in person. I'm a fan personally of ReRave, and I'm really excited to see that you're keeping it going and doing these new and interesting things with it.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I mean, you know, it's a good point that you say that, because a lot of my best memories with music games were when I started. And actually, I a lot of people probably wonder how that all happened, and I won't go into too much detail about it, but...
Well, hold on, because if you're willing, I don't know if you can, but I actually wouldn't mind if we went back to the very beginning and kind of say, how did you transition from music game fan to here I am working on the game? And my assumption was it was always the music, because I know, you know, you do a lot of different styles of music. You're a talented musician. You contribute a lot of, you know, great songs or did in the past for In the Groove, and obviously you're feeding your new games with a lot of your own original creations. But how did that transition? Like, how did that go from I'm doing this to now I'm making them?
Yeah. So wow, that's a big backstory there. So originally, I actually went to school in Seattle. This was around the 99-2000 era for video production. And so I went to the Art Institute of Seattle up there, and as I was going to school, like many other college people would get into, I had gotten into music games at that time. And the really funny part about that is during those times, you remember probably how big LAN parties were. So I was a big part of the LAN party scene, and most of my games that I played were first person shooters, and I was specifically was just I was so in love with Quake at the time. Like, I never really played much Quake 2, but I went from Quake to Quake 3, but that's another discussion altogether. But so I got into music games going to school. I'd go to GameWorks almost every day after school, and I'd get the 2-hour play card, and I was exposed to, at the time, it was a DDR third mix and a DDR USA. And I remember I saw people playing it, and I had seen it at LAN parties. And the reason why I transitioned into LAN parties is because people were playing it with like these home mod pads that they were making out of like wood at the time. And I remember seeing it at the time, and I was like, "Wow, that's really silly, but it's kind of cool." So I just kind of watched them play, and it looked intriguing. But I like most people, I was kind of timid to try it. But then when I went to school and I started going to GameWorks, I saw the machine, and I was like, I love this game. This is like everything that I'm all about. Like, the music's great. The ability to get a crowd was amazing. Like, back in 2000, you could easily play a Dance Dance Revolution machine and get, you know, 50, mm-hmm. 70 people watching you. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like, you know, it was like a performance at the time. So I got into the earlier DDRs, and at the same time as I got a job after school in video production up in Seattle, I connected with Chris Stanford, and many people know Chris from Stepmania, and he had mentioned a potential game project that we were basically going to make a game, because the Dance Dance Revolution series was probably going to come to an end. So we were fans of DDR, like majorly. We would play all the time. I mean, I remember there were a lot of features that actually got into Stepmania from just casual things that Chris and I, like, I remember we used to play a fourth mix up in Alderwood Mall, and there was a Mortal Kombat behind it. And of course, Mortal Kombat features that toasty that's in the game.
Right.
So a lot of features basically made it into Stepmania from little afternoons that Chris and I would spend time with each other. And we just loved playing and we loved hanging out. And it basically turned into, hey, we want to make a game now. So let's make a game. And so we connected with the people in Texas at the time, which is, of course, Roxor. And there was about a group of about six of us that we kind of got started with the game. And originally my role was just to make step charts for the game. I had done music on the side as a hobby, but really my passion was video at the time. So, and obviously playing the game. But as I started getting involved more with the game, I was like, wow, well, maybe I should, you know, transition into making songs for the game in addition to making the step charts. So it sort of turned into this massive content thing. I mean, and at the time, we were a pretty focused little team. I mean, we had there's so many people, and we were all around the world too. I mean, we had Ryan McKenna was in Chicago. Chris and I were in Seattle. We connected with Chris Foy, who was also in Seattle at the time. Who else? I'm trying. Glenn Maynard. He had worked on Stepmania as well, and I think MJ was a specialist in doubles charts. So the cool part about it was, is I just remember, like, In the Groove started out as such a tiny game. We basically took over this Disney rave that was in an Illusions arcade, which was up in Seattle, which is the original playtest location for the first game. Mm-hmm. And we'd get in the habit of going there every night and basically updating the build on the machine. And the owner there was so nice to us. We basically told him what we were doing. We were making upgrade kits for Dance Dance Revolution cabinets. And he said, sure, I've got a machine here that I would love to let you guys use for your game. And so we basically got in the habit of updating it almost daily and going there and play testing and meeting with all the players there. And we actually had the Seattle community at the time was so amazing. I mean, it's, a lot of people play these games, but the best thing about it is just the community and the interaction you get with people, from playing the game. It's not necessarily the game itself. It's just the atmosphere. So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, how was that experience to walk into an arcade, especially like the GameWorks you've talked about in Seattle, which is funny because I've been there too. So I know that place pretty well. And if my memory serves me right, they still are rocking an In the Groove machine there at that GameWorks, right? Maybe I've been to so many arcades now, it's getting a little fuzzy, but I imagine at one point they were rocking an In the Groove machine there. And so is that weird to walk into the arcade and it's like, oh my gosh, like here's where I started and now it's my song playing on that machine and my creation. Like, what was that experience like?
You know, I've actually, GameWorks was one of the rare arcades that never got In the Groove in Seattle, but a lot of the other locations around Seattle, like Illusions, for instance, and Narrows down in Tacoma, they got In the Groove. And to answer your question, though, when I walk into an arcade and I see an In the Groove, it's just sort of funny. Like, to me, I think most people would be like, yeah, you know, I made that. I'm awesome. You know, that kind of feeling. But I don't really get that at all. I really like to just watch people play and enjoy the game. And a lot of times, you know, when I travel around and I see ITGs or, you know, kits, upgrade kits or the actual cabinets, some people might not actually know that I'm even there because I just kind of sit back and I watch and sometimes I don't even play. I just like to watch people enjoy the game and I sort of have a secret smile on my face at the time. And it's like, wow, this is still here. People are having fun and all the memories kind of hit you at once when you see that too, because you remember all the hardships and all the good times about being involved in a project like that. And it's sort of surreal, but you know, I've yet to ever walk into an arcade and tell people, yeah, I'm Kyle. How are you? You know, yeah. A lot of times I'll play next to them and they will have no idea. And sometimes people will leave the arcade and then I get a message from them like a week later or something like, dude, how come you didn't tell me who you were? I saw you at the, you know, X arcade and it's like, I had no idea. Why didn't you tell me? I just, you know, it's just kind of a funny feeling. But it's great, you know. It's all about people having fun to me. And that's why I've gotten involved with this stuff and why I keep going with it, because it's more than a game. It's just, I mean, people meet people and it leads to a lot of fun, and that's pretty much what I'm all about, is just having fun.
So this is a good lesson learned for everybody, is that if you're at the arcade and there's some, like, you know, kind of voyeur guy sitting in the back kind of watching you, that could be the guy that made the game.
Yeah, exactly. I'm 6'4", so I'm pretty tall, and I it's pretty easy to spot me generally. But yeah, I mean, I'll rarely tell you who I am or what my involvement is with the games. I'll just play next to you and have fun.
You're taller than my husband.
Alan is 6'4". You're used to seeing a 6'4" guy. Alan's
yeah,
6'4".
But brain.
I've met Kyle. He is a tall guy. He is a tall guy in person. I'm sure a lot of folks know, you know, ultimately what happened within the groove is that there was some unhappy people at Konami who sent some strongly worded letters and everything, you know, at that point, there was no more, in the groove on the PlayStation 2 and so forth. And that was the point where the development on the arcade versions kind of stopped too, right? Or did it actually continue past that point?
It's actually a funny story with that. So when we heard about – our team heard about the lawsuit happening, we didn't actually change what we were doing. We kept working, hoping that there would be a way that we could work through it.
Of course. The
actual lawsuit hit us when we released the PlayStation 2 version. And I have to be a little bit careful with what I say, because I've been told of what I can and what I can't say about that whole situation publicly, at least.
Completely understand. So if you have to tread carefully and not answer things, I'm completely understanding. So please.
No, absolutely. So, you know, I think I can probably speak for the entire team at the time that we absolutely hated the PlayStation 2 version. We did not like anything about it. It's not what we were about. We started the game because we really liked the arcade scene. We all had the most fun playing it, and we just when we made the home version, it was like probably a dark time of the project. I don't think any of us enjoyed it, actually. I remember we had to censor songs. Chris had to work with that stupid PlayStation 2 development system, which I think he still hates. I think at one point he wanted to throw it out the window. But if you imagine at the time, we had to take basically all the code that was working in an arcade, like an x86 environment, and make it work with a PlayStation 2. And at the time, PCs were far more advanced than a PlayStation 2, especially with our game. I wouldn't say that In the Groove 2 is the most resource-friendly application at the time, and that's because it wasn't designed like with the mentality of PlayStation 2. Yeah, we took advantage of the fact that it was x86. So having to go back and make it work and be optimized on a system like that was just a pain. It was not fun. So, but you know, at the time we kept working. I mean, we didn't want to believe it ourselves, and it was. I actually remember the exact moment that I heard from our manager that, hey, guys, we got to stop the project. I was actually out visiting my family in Northern California. I think it was around Reno at the time, and I was sitting there tied to my Trio phone at the time. I was like, I think I was on some random IRC channel where we were all hanging out for development, which is, you know, that's where we would talk every week about game topics. And he had just broke the news to us, and it was hard. Especially because, I mean, without going into too much detail, we got to the point where we tried to offer, you know, everything that we had just to keep the game going. Like all of us, I mean, we barely had made, anything. A lot of people think that like we made like this huge profit from it, which, I mean, of course there was some money made, but like the actual team members ourselves, we didn't really make that much from the project. If you were to consider all the hours that we put towards it, but at least for me, it wasn't about that. It was just about the game and about having fun, like I've said. So we were willing to try to keep going without really even making that much, and it was so hard for me because they didn't even want us to continue. It was ridiculous. I can't give exact numbers, but you know, we're talking 70, almost 80% of anything that anyone could make would go directly to Konami just to keep the game going.
So, I mean, I totally believe what you're saying about wanting to have that passion to continue the development, because I think, like, if that were to happen to a company, you know, and all those legal hustles, there's a couple ways a person can deal with that. Is, you know, a person can say, you know, GGPO, I'm out. You know, it was fun while it lasted, but, you know, maybe I should, you know, look into a different industry or making something completely different. But that's not the way you responded to this. You have continued to go on with music games. And so I think it's one of those, like, actions speak louder than words things, is that, you know, you're still making music games and you didn't let this little getting thrown off the horse thing keep you down forever,
yeah.
Right?
If anything, it sort of amped me up and sort of made me realize that, you know, someone is not going to stop me from doing what I enjoy. On top of it, you know, when we first announced, but when we first started playing In the Groove, there were so many DDR fans at the time, and believe me, I was one of them too. I really, my exposure with DDR was basically doubles and playing. I actually played doubles exclusively. It's really funny because once In the Groove started, I started playing singles instead of doubles, but. All the way from, you know, like third mix all the way to fourth, fifth, and max. You know, I was an exclusive doubles player. It's what I did. But there were so many DDR fans at the time that just refused to even look at the game. I mean, I think even here on your show, actually, I think there was a hot debate at one point, if I remember listening in, about people not thinking that In the Groove was going to succeed. And that this is just a crazy project that probably won't last for very long.
I mean, it's so hard to think back 10 years. I know so much more about the gaming industry now than I did then. So crazier things probably came out of my mouth. But, you know, and not to dwell on the past too much, but I feel like my personal thing within the groove is I always thought you had some great music. You were a talented guy. But I was always, I think, a little worried for you guys because like, it does look, feel a lot like DDR.
Right. So let me talk a little bit about that more, because I think people's opinions of that, I can understand that how people think that, and obviously it's very similar, yes. But the reason why we originally started doing In the Groove was because we heard that DDR was going to die. Mm-hmm. In 2003, we actually had a fan here that was part of our community in the Portland area that wrote Konami a letter. And the craziest part about it, it's the only instance I know where someone actually sent a letter back. And they basically said at the time, we have no plans to continue development with Arcade Dance Dance Revolution. DDR Extreme is the last mix. Thank you. And I was floored by that he actually got a response, because no one ever in history, even still today, has written a letter to Konami and actually gotten a response without it being an instigating letter from them about a legal action.
I have to interrupt and ask a very tough question. Sure. Could this guy have lied to you?
No, because we actually saw the letter.
Okay.
So the reason why we started the game originally is because we heard DDR was going to die. Chris and I loved playing it all the time. And of course, all of our team did. We didn't want to see it die, and we wanted to keep dance games going. And at the same time, there's a big arcade out in the east called 8 on the Break, which the owner, some people know, Chris Cotty. At the same time, he understood what dance games were for people and the community that they attracted. So he had a lot of involvement actually within the groove. And there were times where, you know, a lot of hardships behind the scene with like financial things and stuff, but he would step up and he would keep it going as well. And I don't think people know how much influence that Chris Cotty has had in the dance game world at all, especially in the States. He's done a lot, and I can't even begin to mention some of the stuff that he's done to keep things going. But originally when we first did In the Groove or started working on it, we were actually going to make it a 9-panel game. And we looked at Technomotion cabinets. The reason why is because we wanted it to be a little bit different. We wanted to add something more besides the standard 4-panel arrow layout, which is, of course, great. But we thought that, you know, there's a lot of things that could be done with this 9-panel format. And I remember playing it, and my biggest problem with Technomotion at the time was I just couldn't understand where the hell I was stepping. Like, the arrows weren't in different spots. So it was like all at the same level, and I couldn't keep track of where my foot was on the pad. So it was so annoying. But at the same time, it's like, it's one of those things where if you play the game enough, you get it down, and you eventually, you know, you progress to the next level. But we ended up pulling away from the idea of making upgrade kits to Technomotion because we discovered there was like less than 40 machines in existence like that were ever made. So there wasn't really a point to make a game for a cabinet out there with less than 40 because you're not going to have a lot of success with that. And so at the time, we started making upgrade kits for dance game cabinets because since we heard that DDR was going to die, we wanted to keep it going. So we thought the best way to do that was to make basically an upgrade kit for existing machines out there. Since at the time, I think California alone, like on the DDR Freak location area, it had like 347 machines alone, in the state of California.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Yeah.
They were,
at the time.
Yeah. That's sort of why we got started with the upgrade kits is because there were all these dance machines out there that were soon going to be outdated because they weren't releasing any new versions. So this would be a perfect opportunity to come in and basically make a new game that utilized the cabinet. That's why we made the boxer kit that basically someone could install into a Dance Dance Revolution cabinet and essentially have a brand new game without having to buy any hardware. And actually, it's so common in the arcade industry, especially with fighting games. People buy kits all the time, and they put them into different cabinets, and it's suddenly a new game. And the best part about that is the arcade owner doesn't need to spend, the $5,000, $8,000, $10,000 on a new machine. They can basically utilize something that they had that wasn't necessarily doing well for them anymore. And let me also just say that, like, In the Groove 1, it was a great game at the time. I mean, there were versions of it that were beyond terrible. I remember there was like a white. Our first theme was a white theme that we used to refer to as the Marble Room. it looked so awful. I still have the original marquee as well that was on that Illusions machine, and it literally looks like something that someone would do in paint. I mean, it was not pretty.
Was the font Comic Sans?
It did not have Comic Sans, no.
It wasn't that offensive.
That's a relief.
Yeah, exactly.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, I have to kind of ask here, I think, one more kind of tough question, sure. Going back to that time and everything, because you mentioned how the arcade scene was dying out, and the way you explain it, and I even seem to recall, again, my memory is so damn fuzzy going back that far, I seem to recall the discussion about that letter and so forth, that like a lot of us were writing off DDR in the arcade. But at that same time in 2003, I kind of feel like DDR's home performance was the strongest it ever was. And I don't think this is a popular opinion, but I personally believe Ultramix 2 was the best mix they ever made for the home versions. And a lot of that was because they got a lot of fans out here in the Bay Area involved in the development of that. And I think that went a long way in making that game a success. So the reason why I bring that up is I kind of feel like, man, if you hadn't gone into the home version, maybe that was the thing that suddenly made the exclamation mark go up and so forth. So what was the decision to go for the home market?
Right. So you bring up a very good point, and that's one of the reasons also that the home version is probably a continuous down spot for most of us in the development team, since we didn't like it to begin with. It's just one of those things where, if you could have a time machine and go back in time, you would say, don't do it. It's not going to work out for you. It's not the right decision. We at the time, though, we were before I go into that too much, what I was going to finish saying is that In the Groove 1 wasn't necessarily a huge success. It started off sort of small, and it started creating an impact. And especially out in the East Coast, like at the break, it started to get a following. But the real time where it started to blossom was In the Groove 2. And at the time when we started going to the shows, the IAPA shows, our booth, I remember being, like a small 10 by 10 booth. Eventually, after like the third or the fourth show, our booth started getting bigger and bigger, and it was more exciting, and we'd have fans show up at the shows to see us. And, when we launched In the Groove 2 at ASI, a lot of special things about that show, actually. In 2006 was the first time that we actually showed the Dedicab, and people were just floored. They couldn't believe it. We had actually met Andamiro, which is of course the maker of Pump It Up, at several of the arcade shows, and we kind of considered them an ally because they were sort of not Konami at the time, right? And we didn't necessarily hate Konami, but we liked what they did at the time, and we wanted to work with them somehow. So we actually talked with the VP at the time, and his name was Steve. I'm going to butcher his last name, but it was like Steve Blatzmeyer or something to that effect. And we made a deal with Animero to make the cabinets because we basically could produce a new machine for In the Groove 2 utilizing their hardware. Which was not that different from Pump It Up, obviously. We just needed to change the arrows on the game and do a couple other tweaks to the cabinet. But much to our surprise, they were fully behind it. And at ASI 2006, the show was just unreal. Like, I remember as well, Konami had announced Dance Dance Revolution Supernova there. And it was sort of an interesting show because, you know, at one time, you know, Konami was there and Amira was there. We were there and Konami had hired people to play Supernova at the time. And I remember the best part about it, which I still remember it like it was yesterday, when the show was not at its peak hour, we would see the people wearing the Dance Dance Revolution shirts coming over to the Rockstar booth and playing in the group too. And Konami was just pissed. They were really upset because they basically hired these people to come play Dance Dance Revolution, and here they were at someone else's booth. And at the time, it was awesome because both Ann and Miro at the same time was upstairs. They weren't in the same area as we were. They actually had flyers for our game in their booth, and they were telling people, if you like this Pump It Up game, you'll really like this In the Groove game that's downstairs, and here's a flyer for it, and go see them. And at the time, they were selling them too. I mean, it just blew up. I mean, at one point, we could not make cabinets fast enough. We tried to even produce our own cabinets in China at the same time. That's why there's Chinese versions of In the Groove 2 as well as Pump It Up versions of the game as well. And we just couldn't make cabinets fast enough. It was really In the Groove 2 that sort of sparked the interest in the game and basically made it a success everywhere. But going back to your console question, it was a very dark time for us because there is no doubt when we started exploring, you know, the consumer versions of the game, that's when Konami did not like it. They didn't want anything to do with it, and they were not happy with what we were doing. And it was just unfortunate that it turned out the way it did. And I would agree with you. If we could go back in time, there's no way in hell that we would have made a PS2 version.
Wow. It's so interesting to hear that talk about the enemy of my enemy is my friend type of thing going on. I mean, it's got kind of the vibe I'm getting there is that you guys were teaming up again. And you see this a lot in the gaming industry, and people in the gaming industry, it's not that they dislike each other, but they're competitors.
That's exactly what it is. And the thing is I at the time, like I don't hate Konami. A lot of people think that I'm anti Konami and I'm really not, because any of the games that I make, I use the inspiration that when I first started playing Dance Dance Revolution to make the games that I make even today. Most of my fun times with those games were Third Mix and Fourth Mix and Fifth Mix and Max 2 and Extreme. Those are my happiest moments of playing Dance Dance Revolution. And when I make songs or games today, I try to basically pull from that inspiration from those games. And I try to basically recreate it in another way, but I try to basically capture that feeling that I had during those games. And I'm still inspired by what they did in the past. Not so inspired by what they do now.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got a few chatters starting with Act Deft over at live.vognetwork.com saying, Kyle, it's okay to hate Konami now, so don't worry about it. Yeah, it has become kind of trendy in the past month or so. It's okay to dump on Konami.
Well, and that's kind of the funny thing about it too, is now that I think of it, you know, kind of thinking back to how, like, it's like, oh, that's just kind of, they're just trying to cash in on, you know, Dance Dance Revolution. But now you kind of look at it with the perspective of like, well, you know, here's Konami taking a franchise that you really like and just kind of going, we're sort of done with it. We're just not really going to do anything with it. I can see where, you know, you'd want to come up with something to kind of keep it going. And yeah, I completely understand that now.
Yeah, and the funny part about it was, like I said, there were several talks. Like, I mean, there was never actually, a lot of people think that there was like a court case and like a judge officially decided like, these guys are wrong and these guys are right. That didn't actually happen. It was a settlement that was out of court, which, I mean, I'm not going to touch too much on it because I'm not supposed to, but like the main thing to remember
is, and it's none of your business, listeners. Let it go. It's none of your business.
I still see people debate it, you know, today online with, you know, on Facebook or on forums and stuff. And I sit back and I look at what they say, because I'm more of a lurker than I'm ever involved in it. But
Do you know why I think that is, Kyle? And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have to interject here. You know why I think that is? Because and I know that, you know, we've said a lot of sassy things about In the Groove and Konami products, to be fair, in the past. So I hope, first off, we never said anything that,
like, Rock Revolution.
Yeah, exactly right. I hope we never said anything that got too offensive. And
absolutely not. And you know, it's funny that you touch on that, because for me, a lot of people think that I get easily offended or upset by negative feedback, or just people being, trolls in general. And I'm not saying that that is a troll situation, but actually the opposite happens for me. When I see negative press or negative opinions about things, it actually helps me to focus more. And if anything, if you're being negative to me directly or any of the games that I'm involved with, it's actually making me work harder and more. Good. It makes me want to accomplish more to prove you wrong. And that's pretty much – it kind of fuels my fire. And that's and believe me, every single project that I've ever been involved with music games has always had the group of people that don't like it. Either they don't like me or they don't like the game. Like, within the Groove, it was DDR players. They hated us. With Pump It Up Pro – all the Andamiro fans and all the Pump It Up fans wouldn't even consider Pump It Up Pro to be a real Pump It Up game. They wouldn't include it in the list of games that Andamiro released, and they wanted nothing to do with it. And it was a blasphemy that it even existed. So all the Pump It Up fans hated it too. And so then when we made Re-Rave, basically the touchscreen people got in on the hate. So people that, you know, played DJ Max Technica hated the fact that Re-Rave exists, even though it's nothing like it. they hated the fact that it existed.
Well, I don't know if you've ever licensed Kelly Clarkson for one of your games, but it's like that song lyric goes, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger," right?
And I there think, you go. There you go.
I think it seems to me anyway, and I don't know if you would agree with this, but what you've learned in all that experience help make the games that you're doing now just that much better.
Oh, absolutely. No, and that's the thing, is all the projects that I'm involved with, they wouldn't be what they were without the fans, you know, commenting in the background, or the people that message me and say, "Hey, I really like this, but I'd like it if maybe you'd consider this." And I can't even begin to tell you how many times that happens and how much influence that people have had with the projects. Of course, you know, I work a lot of hours and I work very hard on it, but the feedback from people is very important to me, and whether or not it's positive or negative, I'm always listening. And even if I can't do something about it right away, it definitely does influence the future with the games. And the people that – I mean, I have to applaud the people that come forward, because some of them I think are a little intimidated at times. But the people that do contact me and have a conversation with me, it does actually help make the games better. And the reason why some of the past games have had success is because of that feedback.
Good.
And it's important to be in tune with what people want.
And I just wanted to finish an earlier thought. We've been going on all these great tangents and so forth, but I wanted to say the place where I feel like, you know, people are frustrated at the current situation, and probably why, because you mentioned, like, here we are 10 years later and people are still debating this whole thing. And I think what's frustrating, and even for me personally, even, you know, despite whatever's happened in the past and so forth, what gets frustrating is that you see Konami defend this and what have you, and then they don't do anything with it. And the fact that DDR in the arcades is kind of, I realize it's there. I know there is a new machine in Japan, but let's be real, it's not what it used to be. So I think that's what it is. It's like, well, why did you squelch this over here just to do nothing?
Right.
Or not to be your full potential, maybe, is a better way to phrase that.
Yeah, and that's that's a whole other topic, which maybe we should get to that. I don't know if we segue to it now, we won't ever get back to what we were just talking to. But the state of arcades today is definitely not what it used to be.
Well, sure. Let's talk about that a little bit. You know what? We are a show full of tangents. We never finish one thought completely.
Okay.
So yes, please tell us your thoughts on the state of arcades today.
So if we were going to basically come out with a new In the Groove today, There is absolutely no way that it would be the success that it became 10 years ago, or roughly 10 years ago from today. And the main reason why is because arcades are basically becoming all about redemption games. And now there are a few things. I mean, of course, some people would just say, so why don't you just make or add tickets to your game? Well, it isn't that simple. The mentality behind an arcade today is they basically want a machine that's as low a maintenance as possible for the cheapest price possible with the shortest playtime that's possible. So The reason why that's important. So if you see games like, you know, Speed of Light or Fruit Ninja, if the play time is less than 30 seconds and someone can sit there and pop quarters or dollars into a machine, there is no way that a machine like, you know, Pump It Up or any of the other music games today or even arcade games today can compete with that. There is no way that mathematically the numbers are not there. If anything, you were losing money by considering putting a video game where you could put like a crane machine or a Fruit Ninja or a Speed of Light. There's no reason financially for you to want to do that. So what happens? Basically, all the arcades have basically become gambling for kids. You put in your money, you get your Tootsie Rolls with your tickets. And not only that, you don't have to do any maintenance on them because they last. And when you do have to do maintenance, of course, it happens every once in a while. But if you compare it to like an In the Groove machine, the other important aspect is you don't have kids coming into the arcade that are bitching to you about the problems mm-hmm. or that, like, you know, a sensor's sticking. You should fix this. No, you just rather get rid of the machine. You don't have to deal with it that way. You just put like whatever the next trendy game is, you put it there in that spot, and then you get rid of it, and you put the next trendy game in the following year. And to even continue that thought, there's a thing called location tests, which are like a hot word with arcade industry right now, where someone goes to an arcade show, and they walk around the floor, and they look at whatever the potential big game is for this year. And bear in mind, this always happens around November. Which is basically the buying season for the arcade market. Anyone who's interested in any games at the time is going to be at that show in November. So they walk around, they look at games, and then they try to find companies where they can arrange a quote-unquote play test. And so what that means is that they want to test your game for their peak season, which is basically 3 or 4 months out of the year, which usually happens around now to the end of summer. And so what they do is they arrange to put your game there, and if your game earns well, again in quotes, they will keep it. But, of course, what happens is you then go through the expense of shipping them your game, you put it in the arcade, and now regardless of how it earns, they're going to return it to you. And why? Because next year they're going to do the exact same thing again to get another game for free, so that they can make money off of it, and then basically continue to make money and not ever have to spend money. So it's like this vicious cycle, of course, here in the U.S. now, but it's starting to affect everywhere globally. It did not used to be that way, but it's now affecting almost every country except for Japan. I mean, even like the U.K., arcade video machines are almost non-existent there. In Singapore and Philippines, same situation. Of course, they have music games there, but the big hot items that they're looking for are those ticket games and basically the games that have the short play times that someone can earn all that money. And then basically get the next game afterwards. And so what that means is like a music game that we are all familiar with, you know, that takes the standard 3 or 4 minutes to play has no relevancy between a ticket-based redemption game. There's no reason to want it because it cannot earn. And if anything, it's more problems.
I think you're just telling us all the sad reality that way in the back of our minds we kind of know, but we don't want to admit. So hearing it from you is just kind of one of those is the reality because you have done work with arcades and stuff, right? And let me follow this up with a question. I have a question from Dark Tetsuya in our chat room, but I'm going to ask this question and then I'm going to change it because Dark Tetsuya says, would you consider a new arcade game? But my understanding is you have Re-Rave Plus in arcades and so forth. So Dark Tetsuya continues to ask, with things like Neon FM, where it can sync up with the mobile version of the game and people can compete while waiting in line, I want to ask, like, what are your thoughts seeing that whole technology?
Right. So, first of all, arcades are not really hip with internet yet. Believe me, it's here we are in 2015. And with all of the experience with like, the Re-Rave original, arcades globally do not have their internet connections together. There are a few that do, yes, but they are not reliable in any sense. So any game that's which most games are starting to try to rely on internet connections now, yes, that is a fact. But if you ask any arcade out there, it's almost a negative point because they don't want a game that has to go out to the network or connect it to anything outside of their arcade. And a good example of that is Re-Rave has been very popular in Disney Quest in Orlando. It took us almost maybe 9 to 12 months to get them to actually connect the machine to the internet to be able to get song updates so people could log in.
Holy moly.
They did not want their machine to basically communicate with the outside world. And that is the most common mentality with an arcade, is they don't want that. The only arcades that do that are basically the arcades that try to cater to the hardcore audience. So if when you bring in the fact that you've got like the Neon FM thing that you just mentioned, that has a mobile game that connects to an arcade game. Okay, this is a great concept in reality. Like it seems fun and a great idea, but here's the problem with it. It's actually taking earnings away from the arcade. And the reason why is because why is anyone going to walk up to a machine and put money into it when they can sit there and play on their mobile phone? And they don't even have to be at the arcade. Why don't they just go home or stay in their living room? Why be at the arcade at all? So if anything, it's actually hurting the arcade by having that feature.
Again, I think you're telling us what we don't want to hear, but we know. I mean, because you are right in that regard, where you know the bottom line is money, and if you can still play the game without necessarily having to spend that money at the arcade, then you know what's it going to be. So I think if Neon FM, I still love the idea, and just as a gaming fan, when I look at it, I go, that's cool. But I realize also that sad reality. So it would seem like, and I don't know if you'd agree or not, maybe what Neon FM needs to think of doing is like maybe either like a stripped down version that happens, or you know, some other type. Because I still love that idea of being able to quote unquote play along, but maybe that has to be different. It's more like you need to control the duck with the Player 2 controller. Instead of having the full experience of shooting the ducks and duck hunt.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, too, I mean, let's go back to the internet topic again, or the network option. It's not going to be a stable connection. So I can already see the problems ahead of time happening with that, let alone the earnings that will be taken away from the arcade. So if I mean, it is definitely a cool concept. I mean, I fully agree that it's awesome. But when it comes down to a financial earnings situation, it's hurting that, and that's going to be something I'm not going to say, you know, a downfall necessarily, but it's going to be something that's going to actually be a huge negative for that aspect.
Hmm. Well, gosh, we're running way longer than usual for an interview, but I really don't mind, because this interview has been a long time coming, and I'm feeling 24 again. Because this is our music gaming era right now that we're reliving right now. So I'm you're making me feel much younger today, Kyle. I appreciate that.
Let's do it. I mean, what do we have? Do we have until 9 o'clock?
I still got to get through a lot of other stories going on in the game. Do you play any like non music games too? You really enthusiastic about any, I don't know, MMOs, fighting games, anything else you get really into?
To tell you the truth, no. And I don't actually – my daily routine is actually pretty simple. I basically stay up every night until like 4 or 5 a.m. working on various things. And then I basically get up and have breakfast. And then I'm lucky if I get outside for the day, which usually – I'm a pretty avid swimmer. So luckily I actually try to do that as often as possible. But after that, no, it's back to work. And – I don't get a lot of time to play games anymore, let alone actually produce music, because it's been so crazy with the development of this stuff in the last I'm going to say almost the last year has been like this nonstop with me, which I get a chance to take breaks here and there. I mean, I'm not that crazy, but I haven't even watched TV or even turned it on. A friend lets me borrow her Netflix account, but I don't even look at that. I mean, I should just sell my TV.
Oh my gosh! So you don't you don't do any of it. You don't do the game. You're so invested in what you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I even have a In the Groove here, which I will occasionally play, just you know for exercise reasons and just to have fun still. But no, it's I don't think people realize how much it takes to actually run some of these projects behind the scenes. I mean, it's you know, it's not just me. I mean, I work with a lot of different developers on all these projects, and you know, eventually maybe if we start talking about maybe the games today, like DittoBeat and ReRave, I work with a lot of really talented developers still, and I push them to their limits. I mean, I am very quality driven, and I mean almost to the point that the people that work with me they almost think I'm insane, because I will. Especially with audio or music too, I will be that one guy that listens to the 4 seconds of audio for like entire 8 hours straight until it's perfect.
keep in mind, insanity is relative and fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's spend a little time, because I want to make sure, you know, we can reminisce about the good old days, sit on the porch in our rocking chair and talk about, you know, what happened in the past. But I think it's very important that we let people know you're still making music games. You're doing a lot of great stuff out there still, and people need to know about where to find this. So I know there's two big music games. I don't know if you have anything else, but I want to certainly talk about ReRave and Ditto Beat. So let's start with ReRave. ReRave, I know, was an iOS app that came out, it seems like it was like 3 or 4 years ago. It was
2011, actually.
Okay, so it was a little while ago at this point. And
right.
Now you have ReRave Plus that just launched on Android. What motivated this to happen 4 years later?
Okay, so before we go into that, I'll just right after basically the iDance part of development for me, which we worked with a Swedish company called Positive Gaming to make a multiplayer dance system, and so a lot of people are also familiar with that. Right after that time, that's when the inspiration for ReRave came, and I can't even begin to mention how much effort. Like, if you think the game development I just talked about was insane. I went into like this basic patent mode search, and like, okay, so like, what happened within the groove? What can I do that would basically stop this from happening in the future? Because I don't want to work so hard on something and then have it taken away from me again. So I went into basically the thinking mode, and thinking about what it is about music games that I like and what attracted me to them. And the big thing that a lot of people might know or might not know is that there's so many patents that are not just from Konami, but there are so many patents from different companies that are basically music game oriented, that basically dictate where music games can be and what can be released. And the people that don't do their research and basically look at that is, once you have any sort of success whatsoever with your music game, you will get it taken away from you. The problem with it is, as soon as someone sees success with the games, and I mean financial success, they're not going to bug you until they see that. But you're going to get a letter, or you're going to get contacted by someone, and it's usually Konami, but there are a couple others as well, where they basically tell you, look, this is patent infringement, and here's what you're infringing. You owe us X amount of dollars, or you know, they make some kind of deal with you, and that's unfortunately the way the tech industry is in general a lot. But I wanted to avoid all that. I didn't want that to happen. So I wanted to create something new that would not be subject to any of those problems. So that's where the inspiration for ReRave came. And the big thing that a lot of people have problems getting past with a music game is you have stationary objects or shapes with DDR or ITG. It's typically arrows that are stationary on the screen. And as we all know, information basically scrolls and becomes it basically overlaps or intersects, and that tells you when to step or press. I mean, any music game that you can think of, you know, Guitar Hero, Dance Dance Revolution, Beat Mania, Dance Maniacs, Poppin' Music, I mean, even games like Neon FM, they all rely on that scrolling aspect where you basically hit a shape when it overlaps or intersects another shape. And that patent is a very hard one to defeat, because the essence of a music game is basically those two things. And it has nothing to do with arrows, has nothing to do with lines. It doesn't even matter if it's 99 arrows or if it's one arrow. It's just the fact that there is scrolling objects that overlap with another object. And it doesn't even mean that they have to be scrolling. They can be scrolling sideways. They don't have to be vertical. They can be scrolling sideways. They can be moving in a circle. They just have to interact. They don't even have to touch. They just have to interact, and there has to be two shapes or more. And that's how broad that patent is. It's ridiculous. The fact that it was ever granted is just – I don't know who – approved it. Well, actually, I do know who approved it, but that's another story.
You know, we got a lot of strong comments in chat, which is obvious to something like this. And you got people saying Konami's basically a patent troll now. Who knew? But I kind of, even beyond that, I kind of go, I'm kind of with you. Like, who ran that through in the first place? And man, we need some patent reform in this country. And you got some other people saying that. Alan talking about some of the podcasts things that happened before that, you know, there was some
Lotsis, out there from, right? They were going after podcasts.
Exactly. Like Adam Carolla spent a ton of money to fight him in court and so forth. And there's a lot of people saying, okay, we need this to be looked at. So I'm kind of with you is who approved that in the first place?
Right. And it's really killing an innovation because like my thought behind that is, and here we go off on another tangent, which I promise you I'll get to re-rave, but
it's fine.
The thing that works with music is someone basically releases a song, right? Once we release it in the public, anyone can do a cover of it. It's actually legally possible to do, and it's completely legitimate to do. If you want to record a cover version of a song, you can. But the agreement is you basically have to pay the original writer of the song, basically a royalty. And so my thought behind that is we should do the same thing with patents, or it should be treated the same way. Because if I want to make a music game that may not be exactly the same and might have different ideas, I should be allowed to make a music game, especially if I'm willing to pay the original person who had that idea. And I'm not trying to take that from them. I'm just trying to make a new concept that's a little bit different, might have a different music selection, might work a little bit differently, but I can't. So they have basically the ability to stop me from doing that, especially when there's a market for it or people that want to play it. And I just think that's wrong. It's not right. I mean, it shouldn't work that way. That's basically pulling us behind in the evolutionary human race, right?
But then
it's basically stopping innovation.
If it's parody, you can get away with it. So maybe you needed to make a DDR parody.
Right. That'll go over really well.
Well, I'm surprised that they can even patent that because a lot of times when it comes down to mechanics in a certain genre of game, they can't patent those anymore. Because yes. Just same like fighting games. You can't patent a fighting game because that's just – there are certain features that are typical to a genre that it's basically – I forget how they phrase it, but it's you can't basically patent that because otherwise you have Street Fighter 2 or whatever and nothing else can come around that's a fighting game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, think about it. Think about if Nintendo, like, let's take Mario example, right? Or Mario Brothers. So let's just say that there was patents on side scrollers. We would have had Mario, and that's all we would have had. We wouldn't have had Kirby, which of course is the same company, of course. But we wouldn't have Crash Bandicoot. We wouldn't have Sonic the Hedgehog. And Sonic collects rings, and Mario collects coins. Oh, there's a huge difference there, but. Like none of those games would have existed. They would have been stopped and they would have been sued. But it doesn't mean that, Sonic is necessarily a copy of Mario Brothers. They feel different. You play them, they're different games. They do different things and they're both fun in their own ways. And it doesn't have to be a competition too between them. You play them and you appreciate them for what they are. But imagine if patents basically affected that. We wouldn't have half those games.
Rami in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com says, fun fact, Namco has a patent on fighting game inputs on screen. Really? Now, see, I knew about the one, and YYR says the mini games played on loading screens. I remember because we had a story on that not that long ago where that came up, but the fighting game inputs on screen, but don't the SNK games do that a lot, don't they? Or maybe that's because they're not in the middle of the fight? I don't know. And it seems like so particular and such a weird thing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and the thing going back to the music game patents is I've mentioned the overlapping scrolling patent, which is the big one, but there are more. I mean, the other big one is key sounds. Why can't other games have key sounds? Well, there's a patent on that. So if you make a music game that uses any sort of sound that basically triggers to fill in the song, well, you're going to be in trouble with that too. And the thing that really basically grinds my gears with all of that stuff is every year there is a new patent that basically makes that broader and broader. So, of course, that patent was originally from 1998, but then it was updated for 2001. But then after that, all of the music games that came afterwards, they basically reference the original patent and then expand on it even further. So you basically have this huge... let's make Death Star reference that's pushing like this little tiny atmosphere into the corner of a building, right? You basically every game after that has basically made it harder to make a music game, and so that's why I'm at nothing else. I'm so proud of Re:Rave because Re:Rave was the very first, and believe me, there are other games that are you could say are similar to Re:Rave. Yes, like a lot of people bring up Elite Beat Agents, which yes, that's a similar game. But Actually, Elite Beat Agents does use two symbols at once. You've got a timing circle that interacts with a another circle. And why isn't that game subject to patent infringement? Well, it's because it's actually a touchscreen game, and it doesn't actually apply to the same mechanics or the methods that are subject to that patent. But the display method could easily be, if they wanted to go after it, they could, certainly, because of that aspect. There are two symbols that basically interact with each other.
You'll have to excuse me if I'm mopping my brain up from the fucking floor after my head exploded when you told me that somebody has patented key sounds, because, I mean, isn't that a Casio keyboard? How those have been around since the 1980s. Like, press key, make sound. That's a keyboard. Like, how did somebody patent that just because now it's on a computer?
You can actually look up the patent. Konami has that patent, actually.
Of course they do.
It's from Beatmania, actually. Now, there are some things that you can do to get around them, which obviously the makers of Guitar Hero have done, because of that. They don't actually use key sounds, but they use different sounds, which basically simulate the same type of thing.
It's that whole thing, like when you play the wrong note, it goes, you know, like right. It's the weird thing, yeah.
And that's not necessarily a key sound. It's something else, but, I mean, it's obviously a huge gray area. But, like, let's fast forward to, I shouldn't say too much because, I mean, again, when you're in this industry, you know about all this stuff behind the scenes that maybe people don't actually know as players, but you basically know everyone in this industry. And so one of the things that made DJ Max Technica sort of come to an abrupt stop is because of a similar type of lawsuit situation with Konami. And basically before that game was going to be they were going to release it in Japan, and basically Konami strong-armed themselves into a position where they basically said, look, we aren't going to sue you. We want to distribute your game and work with you. So obviously Technique is like, okay, I guess that's a good idea. And the reason why they could do that is because if you remember the original game called DJ Max, mm-hmm. It was very similar to Beatmania. And guess what? It had key sounds, and it had overlapping shapes. So basically, Konami put themselves in a situation where they were able to say, we won't go after this new game of yours, but and if you don't agree to this, then we'll go after the old game, which basically makes your new game irrelevant. So what happened is they entered that partnership, and then they were going to distribute the game in Japan, and then guess what? They shelved it. They didn't let it go anywhere. Wow. They had no plans, because they, at this time, they were working with their own music games, and they didn't want anyone else to basically have exposure to music games in Japan. And actually, they're very protective about music games in Japan, specifically. Obviously, it's their home turf. Right. But it's very hard to make a music game and actually get it in Japan, because the arcade industry has a lot of control, even more so here than the U.S. I mean, it's controlled right down to the earnings and the things that they have with the leasing and everything now. I mean, and what happens is if an arcade in Japan doesn't like if Konami doesn't like what you're doing in Japan, they basically just cut off their support to their machines. So now you can't get anything fixed or serviced disagree with them.
Which is easy to do now with the whole EMUs thing, as we saw here happen in the U.S.
Correct. Exactly.
Wow. Okay, now speaking of all that, speaking of Konami and all this, and I don't mean for this to be a let's dump on Konami session day, but the reality is there's a lot of people very irritated with Konami for a variety of reasons that don't even have to do with music games right now. Particularly in the past month. So there's a lot of people thinking, theorizing that Konami, at least the entertainment division, could be on its way out. Now, they may stick around for the pachinko machines, the slot machines, and all that other stuff that they do, but that the entertainment division may be on its way out. So that has me going, wait a minute, you're telling me that Konami has all these patents. Is Konami going to sell those patents to the highest bidder? Who knows where those end up?
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, I think it's easy to, again, we're tangenting away from, which we will return to Re-Rave, I promise. But the interesting thing about that is I think no one can argue with the fact that the teams that are producing the music games today are not what they used to be. And the reason why you can see that is because a lot of the same mistakes they used to make in the past, they fixed in the past, are coming back, like especially with DDR. The engines are suffering from some of the same stuff that they ended up fixing, like with things like Extreme, like the things like the combo are in front of the arrows, which they did fix a long time ago. I mean, little tiny things like that. You can see the same mistakes that were already fixed in the past. Now, believe me, I don't really play any of the new DDRs past Supernova because I just don't have the time, and I just don't find them to be as fun as I do the past games. But it's very interesting. Yeah, who knows what will happen with those patents? I doubt that they will get rid of them because they're very protective of them. So I can't see them selling them. But who knows if there will be license agreements or other things? Which I mean, a lot of people wonder how does Pump It Up exist? I won't say too much about that, but there is a deal that was done behind the scenes that allows that to exist because of Konami and Anamiro coming to an agreement, and I'll leave it at that.
And I know you can't say anything, but my brain kind of goes, and maybe there's a reason you haven't seen Pump It Up, any home version, since that one fringe Xbox release a long time ago. But anyway.
Right. Yes.
Anyway, yeah. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay, let's go back to Rewrite
Now. Yes, we need to talk about – let's live in the now for a little bit, Kyle. We need to talk about your new games because people need to check them out. So the original question that derailed us five times over, we have Rewrave Plus 4 years after Rewrave.
So like the inspiration for Rewrave was let's make a new music game that doesn't use any scrolling or overlapping. So that was the original intent behind the first version. Now we wanted to make a dance game with it at the time, and originally the first video that we showed with the concept it was us playing on a dance mat at the time. And one of the reasons why we abandoned that is if going back to the arcade scene today. When we figured out it was going to cost, you know, over $10,000 to make a machine that does that, it's like good luck. I mean, you're not going to sell a product like that today and be able to actually sell it because no one is interested in anything like that. If we go back to the conversation about redemption machines, so that was quickly canned because yes, it's cool and it's a fun idea, but in practicality, it doesn't make sense financially to do that. So that's why it became a touchscreen game. And it first appeared on the iOS, and the reason why is because it was easy to get to customers that way. We wanted to basically release the product as soon as possible so people could play it. And believe me, when we did that first game, there were so many things that we wish we could go back in time and probably redo because some of the engine became an absolute cluster in behind the scenes. Like the scoring system with that game in general is just such a complex beast. We're in its third generation now with the recent Android version, but the first version of the game, like at the time, iOS devices, I think iOS 4.0 was the big OS at the time. A lot of the Apple devices, they weren't doing the type of stuff that we needed to do with the game. And we have timing, which we wanted to introduce basically unlimited timing windows so that it basically judged you from the offset of the point that, you know, like the 12 o'clock point. So basically you can always, the mentality behind that was every time you play the game, you can basically improve unless you're, you know, a freaking robot because there's no way that anyone can hit 12 o'clock on the dot the entire time. So that's why we thought it was a good idea because it would be competitive and people would be able to see their scores, increasing over time because as you focus in on the game more, obviously you're going to do better. But we also introduced the position aspect, which no music game, to my knowledge, had done that before, in the fact that you don't just have a timing window, you actually have a position window now to worry about. And what that means is it's essentially sort of like playing a game of darts, which some people like, some people, it was foreign to them, so they didn't like it at the time because they thought it was too challenging. But you had to worry about your timing and your position at the same time to basically achieve the best score, which was extremely hard and not obtainable realistically, unless you were a robot, which no one actually came close to getting the full potential of points with the first game. And we intentionally hid the max points on the charts on purpose, mainly because we wanted people to see that progression with their own playing. It wasn't just for competition reasons. We just wanted people to feel like, you know, I can always improve. I can always do better. But you know, some people were a little bit annoyed by that aspect because they wanted to know what the 100% max score was for the song. So now with the later generation of Rewrave Plus, we started developing actually iOS came out in 2011, and then we announced Rewrave Arcade, the original one, which had a 46-inch touchscreen. This was really cool because it was one of the actually it was the only music game at the time that had a screen that size. Mm-hmm. And it was... it was sort of really fun to play on. And the reason, one of the things I remember people describing about it is that this is the first music game where you can't use your peripheral vision. You actually have to rotate your head to sometimes see some of the symbols because of how big this massive this screen was. So at the time, you know, it seemed like a great idea to do that. And unfortunately, the cost of that cabinet, I'm still shocked that today, like a 46-inch touchscreen was about, you know, a quarter of that cabinet, the price, basically, which it's not cheap. Touchscreens that are that size are not cheap at all. But unfortunately, that's what made the cabinet sort of the cost it was, and why we had to be a little lenient with other parts on the cabinet because of that. You know, actually, the game was well received. That received it. You know, there was a big following in New Jersey and New York with it, and then obviously we had the following in Singapore and Philippines, which for me it was amazing because In the Groove officially never really got you know, the support from players outside of the U.S. Of course, now it does, but at the time of development, it really didn't make its way out of the U.S. Until about In the Groove 2, when we started doing the Europe championships. This game was finally, you know, getting global, and it was really exciting to see that. Basically right after, Re-Rave Arcade, we thought to ourselves, hey, there's more stuff to improve with this game. And we need to do more because we're not done yet. So that's what sort of sparked the interest of Re-Rave Plus, because at the same time, we intended to release an Android version about two and a half years ago. But the problem, like I was saying with the iOS game, is that devices just couldn't keep up with what we were doing. And again, it's not like we're just a music game where you have to hit symbols when they overlap with other symbols that's basically judging timing. Like, we're actually judging the position of each tap too. So the CPU has to do almost double the workload to actually accurately judge you. And on top of that, our notes are actually really complex. There's multiple layers to each Re-Rave note. I mean, we've got multi-taps, which look different than the taps, which look different than the holds and look different than the follows. It was actually really hard on a processor to do all that. I mean, we're lucky that we live in today, that it's starting to finally be able to be possible. One of the big inspirations behind Re-Rave Plus was we had to redo the engine all over again and basically make it more optimal. And so we released Arcade first, which if I could go back in time, I probably also would reverse that. We should have done Android first, especially because there were angry Android fans, which understood. I mean, we had announced that we were going to do it, and then once we started development, and we were like, this isn't working out. I mean, we can't even get over 15 frames per second with this yet.
And how often does that happen in the gaming industry, though, where that we have announcements well before all the planning necessarily happened? Well, I shouldn't say planning, but before all the realities came to light about how feasible it might actually be, you know, and these things happen.
Well, people are excited. You know, obviously when they're working on a game or a product, the first thing you want to do is you want to talk to the world about it and tell them about it. And like timing is really important with everything that you do. And if you hype something before that period of hype should happen, then you're actually really hurting the product more so than helping it, because you're making people wait, and people get upset, and especially music gamers. I don't know what it is about the music game community. They're very vocal. You know, they're positive about some things, but they're really negative about other things.
No, not at all.
Right.
I didn't discover this at all when moderating DDR Freak.
Oh yeah. That must have been a fun job.
Passionate music game fans? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it's not really a bad thing. I mean, I think that's why it ends up what it is, because people are so into the games that they play, and they want them to be better. They want to offer their input, and they want to make it the best thing that they can. And I think it's actually really cool that people are so passionate about it. I mean, people have gone as far as like reverse engineering the engines to some of these games. Like within the Groove, people are now installing mods and actually making themes and changing the game substantially. And it's so cool to see. Before we tangent too much from that, Plus was basically our reset period, where we needed to do everything again in an optimal way. And So we released Arcade first, and because it was in our timeline mainly, and we just that's just what we chose to do, and so that's why we proceeded with the next Arcade version. And the reason why we called it Arcade or ReRave Plus versus like ReRave 2 is because we didn't really feel that it was a second version of the game. We thought it was basically, I mean, of course, it's the second generation of the game, but we didn't feel that it was relevant to be, you know, a new basically called a sequel to it. We've basically made the first version a lot better the way it should be. So that was the idea behind the Plus name, is that, okay, this is the original product we did, but like super awesome now. So that's why it's called Plus. So, and of course, just recently, as in last week, we finally delivered that Android version. And I got to tell you, it's like it's just astonishing to see the amount of reviews and messages and the response from all the players. And the cool part about it is not just people here in the U.S. I mean, we've got people in Japan, we've got people in Taiwan, we've got people in Colombia. Of course, these are all people that were inspired by past music game projects that I've been involved with. But you know, once again, I'm the driving force behind the project, yes, but I work with so many talented developers out there, and there are so many people that have contributed and friends as well along the way with all of these games. You know, one of our main programmers on ReRave Plus has been there right along the way with everything that I've done. He's put in the hours. He's done the insane hours of staying up till like 5 a.m. and then getting up at 8 a.m. to actually go to his other job. And it's unreal. I mean, and we work with people all over the world. I mean, as a lot of people know who Jason Bolt is, he works in the, he's sort of a player, obviously a huge In the Groove player who contributed to the In the Groove 3 theme. Mm-hmm. But he's very talented with graphics. And of course, Jordan Frederick as well. He made some of the album art, and there's all these people that have done so much for the game. And like, it really wouldn't be what it is if it wasn't for the people that help besides me. I mean, I of course am the insane one that connects all the dots, but there are a lot of people out there that have contributed to what it has become today.
So again, if people want to check out ReRave Plus and check out the fruits of said labor, it's available now on the Android marketplace. What do they call it? Google Play? I'm an iOS user.
Google Play, and it's the number one new music game right now. You can't miss it.
Yeah, right? You're kind of dominating over there right now, aren't you?
I'm just happy that people are playing it. That's I'm of course proud of that, but it's from the going from the arcade, which, you know, kind of suffers from the problems that I mentioned already, to finally having people be able to play it all around the world. It's an amazing feeling, because it took so much work. I mean, that project is a beast.
And it's free to download, right?
It is, yes. And you know, with the model of today with mobile phones, most games are free, and yep. Especially on the Android store, you can't expect to sell a game for even 99 cents. I mean, and I'm victim of it too. Like, I look at an app that's on the Android market, and it's like, I'm not paying 99 cents for that. I'm not going to pay, you know, $2.99 for that. But like, I essentially just, you know, bought milk for my cereal in the morning for like what, $4.99. So it's like, I'm not willing to put in a, you know, a small price for an app. But I don't know, it's just the mentality of the Android store. But where that's going is that most mobile games today rely on freemium models, where there's advertisements and in-app purchases, and that's pretty much what you need to do to have a formula that works today. Otherwise, it's, you know, it's, I guess it's a thing of the past to try to charge for a game up front, which is unfortunate, because I do like aspects about non-DLC as well.
I was like, I seem to remember paying money for ReRave, and I didn't mind, but that's all right. Of course, man, that's just the song packs I bought. But you could actually get the original ReRave on iOS still, right?
Yes, you can. Yeah. And we are working overtime on still addressing. I mean, the thing about the Android store, which is hilarious, is you've got over 7,000 Android devices that are all running different operating systems, and they're different screen aspect ratios. They're from different manufacturers, and you know, realistically, if people have a device that's like less than a 2013, you're just not going to have the experience we want you to have. And we're doing our best to try to support some of those older devices. But in all honesty, the best thing you can do is you know, upgrade your life a little bit. Consider, I mean, like, you wouldn't play the latest shooter game or, you know, Battlefield on a computer from like 2 years ago.
Yeah, and Loki, you wouldn't use an Oculus Rift on a years old laptop. I mean, who does that?
It's not even a years old laptop.
So when are we getting watch mode?
What's that?
When do we get watch mode?
Apple Watch?
With the amount of real estate on that, it'll be just tapping the same spot in the watch every single time. Yeah,
I still have to wait 2 weeks for mine, okay?
Which is funny, because I heard Apple won't let any developers release apps that tell time.
Really?
I'm sure you can't do apps on the phone that make actual phone calls. You can
probably not.
I don't know. Anyway,
I don't know. I think it's kind of ironic that you can't make an app that has anything to do with time.
But if they did, though, I mean, how hard is it to make an app to tell time? And if they did that, it would just open up the floodgates. I mean, I get it.
Well, we might be in trouble with ReRave because there is a clock involved.
Fair enough. I want to make sure we talk about Ditto Beat as well.
Yes.
Let's talk. What is Ditto Beat for the uninitiated?
Okay, so Ditto Beat was sort of a different direction. This game, what I wanted to do is basically fuse, and once again, really talented people that have worked with me on that project as well, and actually completely separate people that work with ReRave, two separate teams completely, that sort of, it's like a competition or tug of war between who gets my attention when. But the developer on that game has done some insanely great things. I mean, he's one of those guys that will stay up all night. I mean, he's actually based out of Belgium, and he's made another game recently with some success called Boom Dots, which is just kind of tearing up both the iTunes store and also a Google Play at one point. But so the mentality behind Ditto Beat is it's obviously a fusion of multiple game elements at the same time, and it's sort of what makes it fun and unique. A lot of people associate Simon Says with music games. I don't know why. Well, actually, I do know why. I mean, you could kind of say that it is a music game, but it's not like a traditional music game that we're all familiar with. And so because of that, it seems like there's so many comparisons out there with Simon. So I had to tell myself, well, why don't we try to make a Simon Says inspired game that, you know, changes things up a little bit? I thought that the mentality behind it would be fun if we basically took like a Parappa interface, right, or a traditional music reading sense, and basically made it into a repeating game, and basically you're awarded back points based on how accurately you repeat things.
It's so funny you brought up Parappa, because that's honestly like kind of the vibe I got from it, except it was like a mix of, and that's a compliment because I freaking love that game.
Right.
It's a mix of like Parappa, but like the music from like In the Groove and these types of dancing games.
Right. I don't get offended when people say it's, you know, similar to this or similar to that. Actually, I really think it's funny that when I see people, you know, debate in forums or argue about it on Facebook, like, you know, which game is this most like? And it's really funny because a lot of people bring up two or three or sometimes four games that this is all similar to. So the inspiration behind that was basically making a user-friendly music game that someone would be familiar with some of the older elements, but also making it very easy to use for basically kids or people that wouldn't normally play a music game, because a lot of people, when they look at, you know, like a In the Groove or ReRave, they're overwhelmed by following the music in real time. So this is a great sort of a tool as well, where you sort of see a pattern or hear it in the music, and then you get to repeat it back. And the thing I'm most proud about with that game is the experience on a mobile phone is really great. Like ReRave is obviously really good too, but it's a lot of fun when you have a large tablet. But where Ditto Beat really comes into its own is on a mobile phone. You can be on the subway or an airplane, or you don't even have to be online. You basically can play it anywhere you want on your phone, and it's, you know, it has easy modes obviously for people that haven't played before, but the hard stuff is actually very challenging. I mean, for me to actually combo stuff sometimes, one of my favorite charts in that was the Don Speedy mix, which of course is a tribute to the original Don in ITG, and obviously the mix that was on Pump Pro as well. And some of the reasons why we use some of the music from In the Groove is a lot of people like those songs and they're familiar with them. So we thought, let's maybe bring them back in a different way, potentially that can't get sued this time. and you know, sort of do a unique concept with it. And actually, the leaderboards on it are also very competitive. And it's you know, obviously the life system makes it a little bit more challenging as well, because you have three lives that you can't lose. I mean, and the thing about it, if we compare, you know, how it's different from Simon. I mean, Simon doesn't have you press two things at the same time. You're not listening to music at all. I mean, you're basically repeating back a pattern that's playing for you.
You're making key sounds.
Yeah, there you go.
Yet you're making somehow key sounds. Somebody got a patent, even though Simon's existed since, what, the 60s or 70s.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, the thing is you're not getting judged on your timing. So that's one reason why it's different. Mm. But when you combine it with that timing aspect, then, of course, you can pull in that patent as well. But the other thing, too, is you're not filling in the sound or the song with a soundtrack going behind it. So that there are a lot of differences with it, and someone would obviously argue that
I'm really floored in a good way. Like I'm really blown away. Like how ever since you went through what you went through with like ITG, it's like you know your shit when it comes to this legal stuff now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, I mean it's a horrible feeling. It's like when you spend the years and the months and the hours making these projects, and then suddenly it's all taken away from you in like, you know, less than a week when you get a mail from someone. And of course you can fight it with, you know, thousands of dollars and sometimes up to triple digit thousands of dollars. But in reality, when you lose it, it's the worst feeling in the world. And Ditto Beat also doesn't have any overlapping. Basically what happens is you see a pattern first and then you're just recreating it below.
Right.
So it also doesn't have any of that mechanic that you find in the groove, for instance. So, and really with what that game is right now, there's so much more that we want to do with it. But again, it's just a matter of, okay, let's get this released. Let's see how the reception is and if people like it. And if it's good, then let's continue with it and make another version and really do some more of our ideas and get them in there and see what other people have as far as feedback goes. And in fact, there's someone in the chat room who has contacted me with some of his feedback already.
Nice.
Aaron, actually. YYR is who he is in the chat.
He's a friend of ours. Do you know about some of the dream games YYR has done because of OLR?
Absolutely. No, he is a very talented developer in itself. I mean, he also actually used some of my music in a project that he did, and I'm really proud of that. And he's a great guy, and he's a good example of someone in the community that is actively plays a lot of games and appreciates a bunch of stuff, and he's a good guy.
Snake360 shout out right there.
Exactly. Love it. Yes. Great game.
I hope that would come up in the interview at some point. So Ditto Beat, of course, also available on Google Play. It's free. If you have an Android device, you should definitely check it out. I was able to play this at PAX East. You were showing that off at a booth that was showing off like newer models of Android tablets, right?
So the cool part is we NVIDIA had us represent them in the Newegg booth, and we were showing both ReRave and Ditto Beat. And the cool part about it is there were different people liking each games for different aspects, and that's what I would expect. I mean, you're not going to have the same type of person necessarily like ReRave that likes Ditto Beat, and they're not designed for that. They're designed for different types of people, and that's sort of why they're able to coexist without really stepping on each other. But they will be on the iOS store very, very soon. Actually, Ditto Beat is almost to the point of being on the iOS store, and we are working on ReRave Plus as well to get it to the iOS side. Right. Because it's funny because you release Android, and now you have all these people saying, when is iOS coming out? And it was always an inside joke, actually, for me and like some of my local friends here that know me here in the Vancouver or, you know, the Washington area. It's always an inside joke. They would post on my wall, so Android, and it was like, it was just, it got to the point where it wasn't funny anymore for me. Like I'd go to the arcade and they're like, so Android? And then like I'd get home and it'd be on Facebook and there'd be messages. So when is Android coming out? Then I'd get a phone call like in another 2 days, like, so do you guys have any plans for Android for ReRave? Or is that still going to be a thing, or did you cancel it, or what's going on? So like literally every week at a point, like I could not get away from that, and it just it became to the point that like I'm not even going to go there. I'm going to throw something. I swear. Well,
thank you for reading my mind, because I was just going to ask you, when do I get to play it on my iPad? So thank you. You answered that there. So we're waiting for that.
And it's going to be so great. It's going to be optimized. You're going to love it. I mean, compared to the original game, and like I said, this is now the game's third generation. Mm-hmm. So we've learned so much on what to do and what not to do. And it's the way we like to phrase it is the perfect arcade experience on a mobile device. We've finally been able to capture that. And that's why it's so far has been doing so well, is because it's you literally can take the arcade cabinet with you wherever you go and have the same experience. And you can do it anywhere in the world, and you can always be online. You can always be competitive, and it's perfect. And we're not done announcing products at Step Revolution yet. Actually, we've got another product that is just it's going to be great. Let me just say that. Like I can't wait to announce it, actually. Of course, ReRave and Ditto Beat are awesome, but this next product is actually going to work with those. So people are going to see what we have in store, and I'm really excited about it. And it's taking up all my time right now. But you know, it's always another project. You can't ever stop.
All right, you ever want to tell us a little more? The door's open, Kyle. You come on in. Tell us a little more when you're ready. But I understand you don't want people coming to your Facebook and saying, "So, third game."
No, Well, I mean, it might not be a game. We'll see.
Okay. I like that. You're getting a lot of support in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. YYR is there with a question saying, will purchases on ReRave Plus sync between Android and iOS?
So we've gotten that question a lot. We've tried to avoid answering it, because the thing is to a point, you have to basically abide by App Store and Google Play rules. And we're not officially sure yet. That is the intent. Obviously, we want to do that. So I don't want to tell anyone yes, though, ahead of time and basically have people come back to me and say, you said it was going to be possible. We're trying to make it possible, but it's not actually – we're not sure. So I don't feel confident with giving a response to that yet. But at the very least, your account will transfer over between devices, so you will be able to retain your scores and the songs that you played on either device as far as your scores go. But as far as like the in-app purchases go or what's available on your device, I don't know that yet, and I just don't feel confident giving an answer to that. So I'm sorry, but I don't want to say anything wrong. And it's mainly just a Google and a Apple thing, and because the two generally don't like each other, and they don't like it when you talk about them at the same time.
He's trying to be good guy, Kyle. You guys, he's trying. He's just, you know, there's the forces that be.
I'm on your side. Trust me. I want to make it possible that you can spend a reasonable amount to have the best experience possible. I'm on your side. Trust me.
Excellent. This is a interesting question from our chat room as well over at live.vognetwork.com. Raginator says, having ReRave and Ditto Beat on Android and iOS is all well and good, but not everybody has a smart device. I'd like to see a Steam release as well. Well, I imagine with something like ReRave, that might be kind of difficult to do. I don't know. I figure the touchpad, especially for something like ReRave, is probably very important because, you know, you talk about the positioning and everything, but is that an avenue you're thinking about exploring?
Right. So there are a couple different things that we're not officially done with ReRave yet. Obviously, it is a touchscreen game right now, and it has been, where you use your fingers and you basically relies on touch. But the original design, which we actually do have a patent for the game, so... The most exciting part still about ReRave is basically that patent, and basically having someone basically say, yeah, this is unique. This is different. This is not like your every other music game out there that uses scrolling or overlapping. There are other plans in there for other methods of gameplay with it, and maybe they don't include touch. So I'll leave it at that.
Excellent. Lots of support in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. Watching in chat says, plus one for PC release, Steam or no. Rama says, Android tablets are dirt cheap, so maybe look into that. So
they are. They really are. That's one advantage with Android tablets. They are cheap.
There it is. I like this question because it's about another type of music game that I know I've had my eye on. Watching in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com says, Kyle, have you played Crypt of the NecroDancer with your dance pads yet?
I haven't. I've been hearing about it, though, so I think I have to check it out.
Excellent.
I don't have time to play anything, let alone that. But I'll have to check it out. I mean, If people could tell me or give me a link to it, I'll definitely check it out because I love to be inspired by other things that people are doing.
You want to know what's fun and highly frustrating?
What's that?
Playing Soul Calibur with the Dreamcast dance pad.
Oh, no.
Change it
because
up
the Konami logo is the analog stick.
Okay, I have to check that out.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Anyway, my gosh, Kyle, you've been a really good sport, and you have stuck on the line with us way longer than the intended 20 minutes. In fact, congratulations, because I think this very well could possibly be OLR's longest interview ever.
Sweet!
Because you're hitting an hour and a half. And I think Tommy Tallarico talked for about 50 minutes, also over the 20, but I think you went a lot longer. So congratulations, my friend. Where can people keep in touch with you and follow all that's going on with your projects?
Please do, because I like people to reach out and talk to. I mean, right now, actually, don't feel bad if I don't get back to you right away, because I wake up in the morning and I have like 148 messages every day. And then when I reply to people, it becomes 200 and, you know, it's bad. So if I don't get back to you right away, I'd love to hear from people. Either go to my Facebook wall. It's just Kyle Award. And on Twitter, it's Kyle Award. And you can go to my site, although I rarely have time to update it these days. But I do post big events there as well. Suspiciously, both ReRave Plus and Ditto Beater, not there yet, though. So that's a reminder that I should do that.
Something to add to the list.
Yeah, you can message me. You can email me. Anything. I mean, and I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can. And no matter what it's about, if you're just a music game fan, if you played In the Groove, if you like Pump Pro, if you like ReRave or you like Ditto Beat, and you want to know more, feel free to talk to me. And I really do try to get back to anyone who messages me, because my thought is if people go out of their way to talk to me and give me, you know, feedback, then I owe it back to them to take the time to get back to them about it. And, you know, for me, it's, if you've played the games and you've accepted them into your life in some way and they've impacted you, then that's all that matters to me. I don't care about anything else as long as you just have fun.
I've accepted ReRave as my Lord and Savior.
Okay, now that's kind of weird.
Are you going to go door to door? No. All right.
I'm kidding.
All right. And you have a lot of people in chat saying, please visit your bed sometime and get some sleep and all that good stuff.
Nonsense. Sleep means that things can't be done. I mean, there's work to be done. Sleep is... That's secondary.
All right. Before I let you go, I have one more question completely out of the blue, out of left field. And I'm going to apologize in advance, because usually I don't, like, you know, you and I just recently became Facebook friends. I don't usually Facebook stalk people for questions. But when I saw this on your Facebook, I was like, okay, I have to fucking ask him this while I have him on the show and have the chance. And I really hope there's a story here. I'm going to look like the biggest idiot. But if this is true, I've got to ask. So... somebody on your Facebook was saying that they were trying to find an episode of Nickelodeon's Guts that you were on.
I'm not going to answer this question. Sorry.
What is it? Were you on the show or something?
I'm not going to answer that question.
There must be a story there. Oh my gosh. All right.
Well, actually, I do know. Let's see. I do know the referee. I do know Maura Quirk, actually. She's awesome. I'll leave it at that. I'll just go there. That's all. All
right. Fair enough. I guess there's something there I wasn't supposed to ask about. I apologize.
She was always the reason I watched the show.
Yeah, she was awesome.
She basically made the show what it was, in my opinion. She's really awesome. She's still doing her thing today, actually.
Amazing. So. I mean, good.
Yeah, so, well, thank you guys. Anytime you want to talk more about anything, or if you have any more questions, or you just want to chat about music games again for 2 hours, just let me know.
We'd be more than happy to have you back sometime, especially with all these other projects you've got going on.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being a blast in the past tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right.
I love the show. Keep it going. Don't stop.
All right. You don't stop with ReRave and Ditto Beat and whatever else you have in store, and we'll try to keep this going for you.
All right. Excellent. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, my friend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, wow. Longest interview ever, but it was so good. So much eye-opening stuff there. Even some of the folks that I know aren't super into music games, like... feel like they were like learning something from that interview. So I thought that was great. Good time. Thank you so much for Kyle for taking the time out for being on our show tonight.
To register participation for this week's episode of Orange Lounge Radio at VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase TEXT.
So, those of you that are frequent listeners of Orange Lounge Radio are probably going to expect certain things to happen at certain times, but since that did go a little long, I'm going to be reproducing the show on the fly a little bit tonight, so we're going to mix it up a little bit. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to actually go ahead and get into the classic game of the week. So every week on our show, Dark Sakura steps into the gaming vault and finds a game that she thinks, hey, you guys should be checking this game out this week.
Covered in cat hair.
That's right. And Dark
and it's Sakura, not Halo.
Dark Sakura feeling a little regretful maybe that she didn't pick In the Groove this week. But
a little, but then again, it was. I also didn't pick something from Atari since yesterday was Atari Party.
That's right. I'll talk about that a little later, yeah. I promise. But you just, you know, you didn't know it was going to go for an hour and a half and literally dominate the show tonight. But
nope, I just did this one basically to get it out of the way.
Well, and it's, again, one of those games where I'm like, how did she never pick this before?
And I was inspired by my favorite website ever, mm-hmm. that isn't ours, mm-hmm. Mental Floss. I have a subscription to their magazine. I love everything Mental Floss does. They were talking about things that came out 30 years ago, and among those things were the Nintendo Entertainment System. So I was like, well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Super Mario Brothers. And so that's what the hell we're doing tonight.
Super Mario Brothers.
And I hope that none of you hate me for what I put for fortune cookie today. Anyway, so Super Mario Brothers came out in 1985. That is 30 friggin' years ago. How many of us can say we existed and play this game? I think all of us in this room, because we're old as balls. But it also was... It's just the game that everyone knows. I mean, even if you were a Sega fanboy, you still played Super Mario Brothers. It's a pseudo-sequel to the game that came out in 1983, Mario Brothers. But it seemed to have taken the characters and some of the, I'd say, theme styles from that and just put it into a whole new genre. It really brought the platforming genre into the fore. It came out in Japan on the Famicom September 13th, 1985, and then in the U.S. it came out May 15th, 1987. In Australia, by the way, it also came out in 1987. It was basically the game that launched a bajillion ships of various varieties, including water and planetary Mario themes. Also, people stop messaging me because I'm trying to read the dang thing. So, it's basically very simple. You know, it's got patterns to everything. You can blindfold run this game if you do. You basically run around and you hit these question blocks, and sometimes neat shit comes out of them, like stars, as we hear, or one-up mushrooms, or mushrooms that make you big, because the whole thing is really Mario hallucinating. Not really. That's a theory. You had all kinds of secrets in there, like being able to step on enemies with a Koopa shell, or, you know, collecting the 100 coins and you get your one up. You also had things like the Minus World, which was a glitch of sorts in the game. You had all kinds of ways to defeat the enemies in each one, and it gave us the line, "I'm sorry, Mario, but your princess is in another castle. We'll eat this toad kick." It also was one of the first games that I noticed that had the patterns to the rooms, remember? Where on some of the dungeons, if you didn't do the pattern the right way, it would repeat like a loop. Rob, you're looking at me blankly. Rob's giving me a blank look.
No, I know what you're saying.
Okay, okay. Anyway, so it was one of the first games that I played that was like that. As far as how the game went, it was designed by Miyamoto and Takashi Tezuka, who were both with the creative department for Nintendo at the time. And it was basically meant to give the Famicom just sort of a big push right before the disk system came out. When it came out, it really just caused a big stir, you know, I think. And it's funny what they were talking about, like, some of the original level designs that they wanted to do all these graphical things that weren't necessarily possible for the game at the time. but some of those actually ended up coming out in some of the later editions. One of the early level designs said that the mushrooms and Goombas were completely different look. The actual first mushroom, you couldn't avoid it, like, at all. And basically, the mushrooms to change sizes was an influence by different folk mushrooms. And so that's why the whole place became the Mushroom Kingdom. And the Infinite One Up trick was actually designed into the game, but the developers never expected people to actually master it. So, basically, yeah, that's Super Mario Brothers. Now, I did mention the Minus World, right?
Yes.
It is a glitch. And it is accessible by going, by trying to go to the warp zone, but you have to actually pass through the bricks, and it warps the warp, ha ha ha, so that you get world minus one. There are also different minus ones. In fact, the bug is actually in the Famicom Disk System version, but it creates multiple stages that are completable. Like, world minus one is an underwater version of 1-3 with an alternate color palette, and has sprites of Toadstool, Bowser, and the Hammer Brothers in it. Minus 2 is an identical copy of 7-3, and minus 3 is a copy of 4-4, all with alternate color palettes and flying bloopers and no Bowser and water instead of lava. And then when you beat them, it takes you to the title screen. The bug was fixed on Super Mario All-Stars and the remakes, but the Virtual Console versions still have the glitches in them. And NES Remix for Wii U is also includes the bug in it as well. So as far as the alternate versions that have been out, we've had a ton of ports. We had the Game & Watch Super Mario Brothers. There was the Famicom disc version. There was the Versus Super Mario Brothers that was the arcade version, that is its own separate game, really, because it was programmed a little bit different. It had the 1-Up Mushrooms were gone, some of the hidden items were gone. There was All Night Nippon Super Mario Brothers, which was a very, very rare version of this that had graphics that were based off of a radio show called All Night Nippon. It came out for the Famicom Disk System and was a promotional item that was given away by the show in December 1986. The sprites of the enemies, Mushroom Retainers, and everybody were different famous Japanese music idols, different DJs, recording artists, and people who are related to All Night Nippon. The company that it actually was released by Fuji TV, and that company also gave us Yume Kojo Doki Doki Panic, which was made in Super Mario Brothers 2. Super Mario Brothers Special came out by Hudson Soft for the NEC PC-8801 and the Sharp X1 computers in 1986. They had different level layouts, and they scrolled in a different manner to the original game. And there were different enemies included, including some of the enemies from Mario Brothers and Donkey Kong. Super Mario All-Stars was the re-release that had the original Super Mario 2 that was, as we got it, as the Lost Levels. And then there was also Super Mario All-Stars 25th Anniversary Edition that came out as well. We had Super Mario Brothers Deluxe that was the Game Boy Color version. And let's see, there's just so many different versions of it's come out. We had Super Luigi Brothers, which was the Super Mario Brothers remake included in NES Remix 2.
That's right. I was like, that's a recent one. Yeah, yeah.
And it's Luigi, and it scrolls from right to left.
Oh, yeah, and that messes you up so much more than you would think.
Yeah.
Because it's like when you have things like World 1-1 and 8-1 like committed to muscle memory, that one little change just... it's done.
It fucks with life.
It does.
So, we also, of course, had Game Boy Advance re-releases, and just about every Game Boy that's ever been out. And, of course, you can play it in Animal Crossing. So, I mean, there's just way too many versions. I think the most recent addition was the Masterpiece section of Super Smash Bros. Brawl. It's put out as a trial game in the 3DS. So there you go.
All right. That's all they wrote about that.
Right on time, too.
There it is. Super. Except I let it keep going anyway. Sorry about that. There it is, your classic game of the week. A true classic, but to celebrate 30 years of the NES in America, there it is. Super.
Technically, this was 87 in America.
Mario Brothers.
But it came out in 85 in Japan.
Oh.
So.
But it's still the big NES game everybody thinks
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, there you go. There you
Short
go.
Of shooting the damn dog and Duck Hunt.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, you guys. We are obviously running a little different, a little long tonight. But when we come back, we are going to get into some news from this week, as well as your phone calls. We will take care of all that when we come back after this break with more of Orange Lounge Radio. Welcome back, everybody, to Orange Lounge Radio, live on this Sunday evening, May the 3rd of 2015, with episode number 596 of our show, already in progress, and longest interview we've ever had. We just wrapped up there in part A with Kyle Ward, creator of Ditto Beat, Re-Rave Plus, but we had a very lengthy conversation about just so many things where I think Kyle really... I really appreciate like his honesty and just saying like, you know, this is the way it is. And talking some very, very, very real feedback on, you know, the whole In the Groove and how that all went down and the patent stuff I thought was extremely eye opening. And I think one thing that, people don't really realize enough about, and I think he gave very honest feedback about that and talking about like the arcade game scene telling us what nobody really wants to hear, but I think it is really the truth behind all that and the changes you see in arcades. So again, a big thanks to Kyle for taking that time out with us, because the man doesn't even sleep. He's working so hard on all these different projects. So for him to take an hour and a half with us, really, really appreciate that. So anyhow, since we only had budgeted 20 minutes, as we usually do for the interview, and it ended up taking a little longer, we are going to shake up the rest of our show as a result. So we're going to fly things in a different order here. But I will point out that the Skype line will still be open in about 30 minutes, depending on how long some of these other topics take us. And of course, you can always give us a call on Skype at Orange Lounge Radio, all one word, or via telephone, 1-877-GAME-OLR. But first, we're going to talk about our gaming weeks. Believe it or not, we never got an opportunity to talk about our gaming weeks, which usually we start off the show with, but it's a different show tonight, so we're going to start off the second half. How was your gaming week and the types of games you've been playing this week? Dark Sakura.
I played a buttload of Final Fantasy XIV and got some good things in my Adder's Progression, or whatever the snake group is, Twin Adders.
Gridania people.
Yeah, the people that live in trees.
Yeah.
Had a really good time, actually. As mentioning earlier, we did a trio group going after one of the dungeons, which was I've never done before. We just had somebody basically sitting in a corner so that we had four people. And it was pretty fun, really fun. I've also played some Dragon Age Inquisition. I finally got around to installing the beta stuff because I am now in the Dragon Age beta. But I haven't had a chance to play anything, which will come into play later on for stuff and reasons. And I missed Atari Party, which makes me a sad panda. But I had the Lurgy. That's it.
All right. Loki, how was your gaming week?
It was pretty much just Oculus Rift stuff this week because I was messing with my Oculus Rift. So I mainly was playing. It's not even really playing because you're not really interacting too much. It's more like watching. But watching... No Limits 2, it's a coaster simulator, and it does a pretty good job, I think. It's pretty awesome. You can make your own tracks in it. I stared at the screen for about 5 minutes last time. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. I was just like, I'll just download the ones off of the Steam Workshop. People have already done for me. I don't need to worry about trying to make my own coasters. So I played that, and then I also played a few other demos. Vanguard V... I tried Surge, which is the one that kind of got me hooked at the indie arcade that we went to. What else? Unreal Coaster. Tried a bunch of the different demos.
You're just in that absorb everything mode because, like, I have this new toy. I have to try everything for 5 minutes.
Well, it was
right?
More like I was just trying to see how the stuff ran, and like some of them, like there was one that if it's a roller coaster that's through like the Citadel stuff, you know, the Epic Citadel thing, and it just that does not run at all. My computer's like no. So I was just trying to see what ran well, and actually, No Limits 2 seems to be the one that runs rather well, the frame rate. I mean, it's a pretty old game, but it The frame rate's pretty nice. So I've been just checking out different things, coming up with ideas of what I want to do with it. You know, I definitely want to develop something for it, but got to finish one project at a time.
One project at a time.
Hey, and I've been working on my stuff today. I got finally the cats to stand up properly and align themselves properly. What the problem was, and this is kind of getting into like coding stuff, it's just there's a command you can do for... It grabs a certain property from the children on an object. And the problem was it was also grabbing that same thing on the parent object as well. So it was grabbing the parent and the children. So it kept using the parent's one. So I had to manually set that, and now it works fine. Because before they were just like flipping out and just not... I mean, that would have been perfect for the game because it's really glitchy. But I didn't want to be that intentionally glitchy. But now, like, I can fling them, and they pop right up in the direction that I launched them in, which is kind of nice. So now the next thing I was working on is I have to get them to hop a little bit. So I was trying to figure out what the best way to do that is, because I kind of want it to have it where they climb walls unrealistically. And so I wanted to do that, but we'll see. If it gets to be too hard, I'll just scrap that part because it's not that important. So that's what I've been working on. And then Oculus stuff.
All right. Sounds good. My gaming week, a lot of the same stuff. I usually play a lot of Final Fantasy 14 as usual. I haven't been playing Diablo as much. I think Alan and I might have finally like burned out the candle on that for now. I don't know. Who knows what will happen when season
play
four
Dragon
starts.
Dragon Age.
Or when there's a patch. And funny enough, Dark Sakura, I actually played a little bit of Dragon Age Inquisition this week on PlayStation 4.
We have to play multiplayer.
I don't remember what it was that got me into... Well, I have it on PlayStation 4, so I don't think we can play multiplayer, sadly. But I think... I just remember Shane being over here, and we decided to play it on the TV for some reason. Oh, because on my new TV, that was like the one game I hadn't really looked at yet was Dragon Age Inquisition. And I talked... I think I talked last week or the week before about how Mass Effect Trilogy on PlayStation 3... doesn't look so good in the high refresh rate and everything. Like, I support a Mass Effect remaster to fix some of those issues. I really do.
Well, how does Dragon Age look?
Dragon Age looks great.
I need to look at it. You have to show me.
It's great. And what I decided to do is I started over. And this time I decided to play, I guess technically it's a rogue, but it's an archer to me because that's how it really plays. I guess it's like different skill trees or whatever. So I'm playing basically like a Varric, but a human, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I did that because now that I know a little more about the story, I know that I'm going to want to have mages in my party later on. So I thought maybe having like three mages is going to be a bit much. So
no, it's actually not.
Yeah,
I've taken an all mage party for like half the game.
Excuse me if I like a little diversity in my party.
I've taken down three dragons with an all mage party. although I have to say my usual party is very balanced.
Yeah, that's fine. And you also have this real, real big thing for Solas that I don't necessarily have,
la, 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 la.
But, you know, Dorian.
I actually, no. I started my Cullen romance.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I got my Cullen romance started, so that makes me happy.
I'm a little bummed out that he's not romanceable as male, but whatever, it is what it is, I understand.
I don't need to see the Cullen romance thing. I've already watched the Twilight movies.
No, this is different. There's a big lovely fur coat involved.
I have to say
what?
His romance is a lot more fluffy than one would expect from the big bad ex-Templar.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's see. And Alan Alchemy in chat pointing out that he is with mods. Bless you, modding community. I'm glad you got your way this week with the whole Steam thing.
May I say something real quick?
Sure.
I don't like the idea of being able to mod somebody's sexuality because you can't mod somebody in real life.
Yes, but a video game is
video
not
games
real
are real life.
Like,
last I checked, you know, I in Skyrim, I don't necessarily find myself fighting, you know, Thomas the Tank Engine and dragons. And,
yeah, like let me make very clear. I understand that you don't get to control people's sexuality in real life, so I'm not upset that the story makers made a conscious choice to have him only be romanceable one way. That's how it works in the real world. I'm fine with that. But the mod thing is just, like, well, I look at it like fanfic. It's not
exactly
real.
It's
not canon.
Yeah, exactly. It's not canon.
There's a difference between headcanon and canon. And the stuff that's not either.
Fair enough. And Alan Alchemy is pointing out he does have dialogue hidden in the sound files. Anyway, Alan also wants to clarify about Diablo 3. I still play it from time to time because it's mindless and fast-paced, but I'm just doing riffs and trying to get very specific things to drop that are holding me back on progression. I spent 15,000 blood shards on rings, and I can't get one of them, so the spark is gone. So yeah, I think it's going to take another meaty Diablo patch or something to really get me interested in Diablo again, but I still love the game. I really hope they announce an expansion at BlizzCon. I do want to mention real quick, though, this is important, Atari Party. So even though Darkstalker didn't get the chance to go, I went for the first time. So she went last year, I went this year. And Atari Party is just a celebration of Atari, you know, before the driver days. It was, you know, the classic Renaissance early 80s Atari. And I'm not just talking about 2600, and this is what surprised me, is because I was expecting to walk into Atari Party and see 2600s all up and down one wall, and then maybe like some 7200s, and then like the computer things would maybe be in one little corner. No, it was like there was one station for every little Atari thing.
So how much Lynx did you play?
I actually didn't, but they did have one there.
I have the old school one still. Do the you? Big fat one.
We've got ours.
I like that they had a Jaguar, and you better believe there was only one game that was on that Jaguar the entire time.
Actually,
Super
last
Zapper
year,
Recharge, Tempest 2000.
Ristar was on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, was it Ristar or Astol? It was Astol.
To be fair,
it was Ristar.
I got there late, but it was Tempest. Well, and somebody brought a Tempest cabinet too, which I thought was awesome.
There was also, well, yeah, there were the cabinets that they had at Sunnyvale one the other year. Mm-hmm. But there's also a person who every so often will show up with the Tempest 3000 prototype.
Hmm.
Which is the first Atari Party I went to.
There was some type of missile command, like 8-bit thing that I guess was new. I didn't get to see that a whole lot, but I know they were showing off some new things. And, you know, I here's the other thing about Atari Party. They have it at a library in Davis, California, or as we used to call it on the show, the People's Republic of Davis, Abandon All Hope, Ye Who Enter. It was in Davis, California at a library, and it was completely free. It was just in a room in the side, like kind of like when you walk into the main foyer, you know, libraries are supposed to be quiet. So how do a bunch of people play Atari? Because the library is like you keep walking forward, but you go to the left and there's like this whole other room there that's kind of an annex to the library. So, and it happens in there. So I was, you know, really surprised. It's free and they do it just for no other reason than they love it. And they want to spread it around. And this was great. Lots of kids there. And lots of kids playing these machines. And it's just so funny to hear some of them talk about, like, some of the things they talk about like, how, you know, this wasn't even around when I was born. And, oh, it's so funny. Like, Activision still makes games today, but their logo used to show on the screen the entire time. Like, can you even get rid of that? And it's just funny to hear some of the things that kids talk about. So a lot of kids, which I thought was really cool, that, like, it's a way to, like, expose the younger generation to, like, these are the games that mommy and daddy played growing up, which, oh, my God, I dated myself now.
Well, we usually bring both 5200s every year, although mm-hmm. I think that this year Dan brought one of the 5200s.
Yeah, and he brought a Genesis. Yeah, which they also would have, like, they had like an NES with Tengen games on it and like a Genesis with Atari collections on it. So they still, like, they had Atari tangent things.
And there's the guys that bring the computers. Mm-hmm. And there's actually one guy who I think will bring an Apple IIe.
I didn't see that this year.
Yeah, but, you know, Atari did published a few things, but I used to just sneak around there and play kicks.
Does anyone bring Alone in the Dark?
No, nobody brought Alone in the Dark. It seems like Raspberry Pi is a big growing thing, you know, since it's so easy to hook up to a TV, and I know a lot of people do it with emulators. They had one there. They gave a few away in a raffle that they were having, which, again, the raffle was free, which I was just impressed with. They just spread the Atari love. That's all it was. I was very happy just that, like, this is happening and exposes people to something they may have never seen or just were too young to recall.
Now, did you play the prototype that we got of Tempest?
I don't think so.
For the 5200?
I don't think so.
We have Tempest and Millipede.
Nice.
And we picked up a few other carts that were just repros of prototypes. Fully playable, everything.
I played Jungle Hunt on your 7800, And Irene, Princess Irene was there, and she was laughing at me the entire time because of some of the animations that'll happen. Like, if you get hit by the rock, your dude just kind of flips over and hits on his... It's just really funny, like, the animations. And you know
Jungle Hunt was the best.
She'll point and laugh at you and have no problem at it, so...
A lot of Q-Bert, which was a really creepy version of Q-Bert because of the empty eyes. Mm-hmm. You could see through his eyes.
You can. Keystone Capers, I played a lot of that on 2600. I used to play the shit out of that on GameTap, of all things. Like, I don't know, I can't explain it. Like, it's such a simple game, but, like, I freaking, that's, like, one of my favorite 2600 games. So, anyway, enough about my gaming week. I could talk more about Atari forever, but I just want to give a big thanks to all the people that make that happen and put that on. You guys are doing it.
You
got
to come to one of the Sunnyvale ones.
So is that like one of the flashback consoles right there?
That actually is my Intellivision flashback console that I picked up on
I saw the wood grain.
Groupon, of all places, some time ago. It's not bad. I mean, it's a little, you know, it's one of those things where I think a lot of those games you remember in your memory a little better than they really are. Mm. And I'm going to say something controversial that I'm probably going to get shit for and regret saying later on, but... I kind of think 2600 had more memorable games than Intellivision did.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know what's collecting dust in the corner of our house? Huh. An Intellivoice.
Yeah.
You can find flashback consoles at the dollar store. Ooh, I need to go to the dollar store.
Can you really? Yeah, I want a 2600 flashback, actually.
Hell, I'll buy any flashback console at the
dollar. For a dollar?
Hell yeah. I'd buy that for a dollar.
All right, let's travel around the world and check out what is coming out soon. So we've talked about what we've played this week. Let's talk about what's going to be played next week. Loki.
All right. And there's actually stuff coming out, which is shocking. So starting off this week, we actually have kind of a re-release, but they're doing the Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor Game of the Year Edition that you can get on PlayStation 4 or Xbox One.
No, you know, wonder they had the deep discount on the PlayStation sale not that long ago. No wonder.
Uh-huh. $49.99. Yeah, see, and how long did that take, really, to come out? That came out back in September, so that's like 8 months. So in 8 months from now, we can get that Game of the Year edition of Mortal Kombat 10, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Or X, or whatever it is.
For okay. The holidays, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yes, exactly. Right in time for December. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor 2 Record Breaker for 3DS is also coming out this week. This is a download title right now, but Wolfenstein The Old Blood is coming out on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Also, Project Cars on PC. And this is kind of disappointing that it is an exclusive to the Evil G. But hey, you remember that game that came out back in September called Disney Infinity, a 2.0 edition? Remember how they were saying that there was going to be a version for the Vita? Well, that finally is getting released.
Hey.
Exclusive to the Evil G. You can get that starter edition for $60. It includes, was it the Black Suit Spider-Man or Symbiote Spider-Man? And they also have his playset and some other crap with that. So check that out. And that would be it.
All right. Let's go ahead and travel to the UK. I may not have Japanese releases tonight. The site I usually use isn't working, so let's go to the UK.
On the 5th, we have Wolfenstein, The Old Blood, for everything that's awesome. And then on the 8th of May, 2015, we have Kirby and the Rainbow Paintbrush for Wii U and Project Cars on the things that are awesome.
All right. I'm going to have to go ahead and take a pass on Japanese video games tonight because my site's down. But I believe this last week was Golden Week in Japan. So, because they were just doing this big sale on PlayStation as well. So there might be a few things. I know Bravely Second was a big release. It just came out a couple days ago. But I will catch you guys up next week.
So oh, it's working for me. That's
is
too
it?
Bad.
That's weird.
Yeah.
All right. What? Oh, yeah, that's so weird. Okay, yeah, I went back to the site, and now all of a sudden it works. Okay.
Here's a hiccup.
Hiccup, little hiccup there. All right. Live radio. It's what happens to me when we're live. All right, let's see if we can travel to Japan and check out what's coming out over there. I don't see anything on the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One. See, I think the Golden Week stuff is screwing up a lot of the releases. It's like releasing during the holidays here. Yeah, I actually don't think there are. Maybe the Vita? Nope, no more releases till the 21st on the Vita. 3DS has, on the 14th, codename Steam, Lincoln versus Alien. That's what they're calling it over there. That's
Lincoln versus Alien.
That's the name of it. That is coming out on the 14th of May, which is actually next week. But yeah, it's pretty slow over there in Japan right now otherwise, but they've got a lot of holidays going on right now, so that's why. All right. Now let's do some news for the week. We're going to do some news highlights from this week. So we'll start off, of course, with Loki.
All right. So since I was just talking about Disney Infinity 2.0, well, stuff's already leaked out about Disney Infinity 3.0. And yes, as you would figure, it's going to be Star Wars themed this year. So Star Wars stuff. Yay. So they've got, it looks like it's going to feature, at least based on the box art, it kind of looks a little bit like Clone Wars stuff. They have, you know, Anakin and Ahsoka as the characters in included with the set. And then there's a rumored date that it's supposed to be coming out on August 20th. This is coming out from a leaked German retailer site. And, of course, Disney's not commenting on Disney 3.0 at all. It's supposed to be coming out on Wii U, Xbox One, Xbox 360, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 3. No word on Vita.
Well, I mean, I think we all sat here even a year or two ago.
Oh, like two years ago.
Coming, like, oh,
2 years ago they were talking about
the Marvel thing will be next year, and then the Star Wars will be the year after that. So now the big question: what happens next year? More Marvel,
Pixar.
Pixar. That's a good thought.
Tron. Ultron.
No,
it's just Ultron.
Tron.
It'll probably be Marvel again.
Tron wouldn't be for a couple years.
Because yeah.
Kingdom Hearts. I'm kidding.
Oh, I wish. I think I like the
be
Pixar.
Great.
Or
like
just how about like everything? Just smorgasbord of stuff. I mean, yeah. They're going to still do that this year, but like, I don't know. Now you can have, you know, I am a little disappointed with the Clone Wars stuff, but I'm assuming that's just because they're going to have, you know,
that could just be the art style of it.
And
too.
It could be, and it's very possible that it looks similar art style wise. I'd be curious to see what it is, because they're showing, like, just based off the box art, you know, they've also got, you know, I can see, let's see, yeah, it looks like they've got C-3PO and R2-D2 and Leia.
Well, of course, and have to have them.
So I'm sure they're going to have a lot of that stuff, especially once we get towards the new movie coming out.
All right. Well, a new story I have for you guys this week is about the Final Fantasy 15 demo. How many of you guys have played the Final Fantasy 15 demo? How many of you guys can't wait to play it again in an all-new 2.0 version? That's right. And this is, I find this fascinating. They are going to be releasing a second version of the Final Fantasy 15 Episode Disque demo. And there was this whole YouTube that they did with Square Enix, and they talked about how there was feedback on the demo, and they're going to be addressing the feedback. So they're going to do Final Fantasy 15 Episode Disque 2.0 in May. Some of the improvements include different camera control, a different type of dodging, and a new targeting system. So a lot of those complaints about how it controls and some of that weird feeling are going to be addressed in this. So very interesting.
I'm glad they're taking feedback. Where's my free to play Final Fantasy 11.
don't go. Now you're talking about money. But I find that very interesting.
Actually, I'm talking about no money. That's the
exactly. Well, that's the problem. But I think that's so interesting. And like this is unheard of in like a Final Fantasy world. Although, well, I should say a single player Final Fantasy world, because actually Final Fantasy 14. They really had to reinvent things, and 2.0 ended up being, you know, the real game for all practical purposes. So maybe that had some impact on why they're doing what they're doing with Final Fantasy 15. But if you think about it, there was some news article I was reading that really put it in perspective. Final Fantasy 15 was announced before the original iPhone. As 13 Versus, granted. But still, that game is now what we're looking at with Final Fantasy 15. This game has been in development a long time. So to hear that they're still taking their time and addressing the feedback, while that's a good thing, you know, we don't want to, them to rush a release and release something that's bad. It's just like, wow, this game may still be like a year out from release, if not more. And here, at least I was thinking, oh, we'll probably get it this year. Now I'm thinking not so much.
I could see it next year for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be next year, I think, at this point for sure. So that's just like, wow. And, you know, Square Enix does have, you know, they have The Rise of the Tomb Raider this year, right? That's one of their big holiday games on Xbox One.
Yeah.
Not sure what they have for the Japanese audience.
Aren't you glad, though, that this demo doesn't have a limited amount of playthroughs like on certain Nintendo consoles? Oh, wait, all Nintendo consoles? Thank you, Nintendo. Thank you.
Okay, but hold on. Even if that number was 30, which most of them are on Nintendo. Like, I don't think I would have played Episode Dusque 30 times. Come on.
Yeah, but that's sitting down 30 different times to sit down and play the demo. I mean, you can continue with your
progress. Why they, you know why I bet Nintendo does that? Because now look
at... they're assholes?
Well, now look at PT.
No,
where people are selling PlayStation 4s with PT on it.
It's because they're like, well, if people can play... What it is, and this is really silly, is it, the thought process behind it is, well, people can be entertained enough by the demo to where they won't buy the real... the game, which I say, no, that's wrong. People will play the demo so much that they will love that demo, and then they'll go buy the full game. Mm-hmm. That was always my experience with those PlayStation demo discs. So I played the crap out of them, and I was like, damn, the Cool Borders 2 is really awesome. I really want to play this, this game. And then finally, I was like, okay, I'm going to go buy it finally.
I just think the most I've ever run down a demo on 3DS is to like 25 plays. Like, I do... I'm with you to a point, Loki, where it's like, it is weird that this arbitrary 30 is in there in the first place, but after seeing what happened with Silent Hills and the contract talk, maybe there's something in contracts. I don't know. There's some weird
thing. It's just
silly.
It's what it is. It's just silly and unnecessary.
All right. Anyway, Episode Dusque 2.0 coming in May. No word yet about if it's just an upgrade to the 1.0. Or if you will be able to download this without owning Type Zero, although I would think it is about the money. You're still going to have to buy Type Zero for this demo because I'm sure it sold a lot of copies for that demo. Darkstalker, what do you have for us tonight?
I have something cool. It's Dragon Age related, of course, because it wouldn't be me. Dragon Age Inquisition is getting free DLC. Yay! We're getting a multiplayer thingy called Dragon Slayer where you play... in new locations, you get new people that you can be in a bunch more. Basically, you get to be at Ferelden Castle, and I will be super disappointed if Alistair's not there. And you also can play a Skywatcher who's an Avar. You can play Zither the Virtuoso or Isabella, which makes me happy. She has an Admiral hat, according to Varric. I'm actually looking forward also to the Black Emporium myself, where you can actually remake your face if you want to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Black Emporium is going to be pretty cool, too.
That's really good, because I know people who I won't name on this show, but his name rhymes with Dane. And he will start his entire game where he's like 14 hours into it because he realized... the color of the eyes is slightly off, and he has to remake his entire character.
I will do that when I find hair clipping through the ears. I spent, like, half of my characters
throw it all out.
Have big
There's
ears.
There's an imperfection flips table.
Their ears are a certain way because I couldn't deal with the clipping. You saw when I changed Mulan's hair in Final Fantasy? Because it clipped through her outfit.
I just laugh at it and move on, though. Like, to restart the entire game, I can't. That's too much. I mean, not that I'm telling you how to
I
play
agree
your game,
with Shane.
I said I wouldn't say his name on air.
Well, I will say his name, and I agree with him. Shane, you have my support.
Fine, you're both wrong. You're both weird.
You know what?
All right.
What does the butt say?
We're going to get to the Fugle question of the week and your emails and all that stuff. Actually, let's go ahead. Why not? We're doing it live. And
we're doing live.
That's right. Fuck it. We'll do it live. We're going to do the Fugle question of the week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Then we'll do more news.
I'm not prepared for any of this.
What, you don't?
Is there a test?
Yes. So pay attention.
Do you want to finish my horchata?
You got an horchata?
Do you want to finish it?
Hold on. We have to stop the show. I'm getting horchata.
You can finish my horchata.
Everybody, put the show on pause. Rob's getting horchata. Hold on, guys. This is very important.
I backwashed it. I'm kidding.
And it still has enough cinnamon in it. Oh, man, horchata is so good.
I know, right?
All right. Oh, yes, Fugle question of the week. Facebook, Google Plus, throw it together. You get Fugle. It's very cool. Every week, of course, here on the show, we ask a question of our fan communities, and I usually like to, if I know we're going to have a guest on for the night, I like to tie the question into the guest a little bit. And I kind of knew we were going to go a little old school tonight with our guest and revisiting our music game roots a little bit. So the question that I asked over at our Facebook page and our Google Plus page was, what is your favorite song to play in a music game ever? And I knew some of you guys would probably have some strong opinions with this. Just a lot of you playing DDR over the years, or Beatmania, even maybe Parappa. And then I kind of figured there'd be a lot of answers from like Rock Band and Guitar Hero as well, and some of the other contemporary music games. So let's see how it broke down. Over on Facebook, Fabrice A. says, I can't choose between Rock is Sponge or Fear is the Mind Killer from Rez. Very interesting to start off with Rez as a music game, which, you know, may not necessarily be a music game per se, but it kind of, like, it also, like, very much is. Like, it's just not, it's not the type of game I was necessarily thinking of when I wrote the question, but absolutely, like, Rez has, like, such a phenomenal soundtrack. That's I love all the songs in that game, so that's a good answer. Javimon replied and said, We2R1 Super Euro version from Para Para Paradise second mix, and Meet My Friend B4ZA beat mix from Dance Maniac's second append J Paradise. You gotta love those long music game names. Our buddy Brad from Pod Culture says, Ring Capacity by the band Kirby Crackle. It's DLC from the Rock Band Marketplace. Dark Tetsuya says, from Beatmania 2DX Fist Style, Sync by Outphase. Seriously, it blew my mind playing this with headphones on. Once you get to that part where it starts building up towards the end, it was amazing. Rama replied and said, I can't pick one. I can't. Two, Freckles and My Sweet Darling from DDR Max. Darling, darling. I like those songs too. Those are nice. And Freckles was always the easy song to get max 300
on. I can't
on.
Listen to either of those without the Japanese lyrics in my head.
That's okay though. That's okay. Maybe Rama does the same thing. Andy R says, Airwave in DJ Max Technica. The MX chart was so fun. I'm sad I never passed it. RIP. Our buddy Jonas is over on Facebook saying, so much to even say, but for the song plus game that got me into music games, Taku. With Era, Nostal Mix from DDR 4th Mix. Raginator says, my favorite song to play is Dirty Little Secret, which was in Rock Band 1 or 2. Pretty sure that was a 2 song, because that one was like one of the like first few stages I think you played, and it's a catchy little song. SSG 100 Matt saying, there's so much to choose from DDR, but I'm going to go with 2 old school songs. Okay, what's up with this? I ask you all 1, and you're all giving me 2. Y'all are breaking the rules. Anyway, all right, I'll let it slip. SG100 Matt says, my favorite song is Never Gonna Make from Morgana from DDR 4th and 5th Mix. My favorite step chart is Sugaru Apple Mix Challenge from DDR Max 2. The step chart was so much fun because of the gallops, and I was able to freestyle some of it after playing it many times. And lastly, on Facebook, Hitstun says, the one that sticks out to me is Larkin Seal, Ready, Steady, Go.
Such a good band.
The final boss song from Oendan, which we know here as Elite Beat Agents. A Cheer Squad uses an upbeat anime theme song to psych up the entire world. It's an exhausting, over-the-top conclusion to a great game. Those are some great answers over on Facebook. Let's check out...
That song is still on my Cars playlist.
Yeah?
Yep.
Does it inspire you to drive fast?
Really fast, actually. But I actually like Larkin Seal. Really good band.
It is a good band. Over on Facebook, we had just a couple answers here. We had Act Deft, who says, this question is kind of hard for me to answer. Well, it's supposed to be. It really depends on the game and probably the mood I'm feeling in. But if I had to choose one, it would be 1998 from DDR Extreme. So energetic, so fun to dance to, and one of my favorite songs in all of DDR. And lastly, Redertainment says, I always enjoyed playing Take Me Out by Franz Ferdinand when I played the original Guitar Hero, but I really like British pop. I'm sure Dark Soccer agrees with me. The Magic Whip, April 24th, 2015.
I've already been getting my downloads from it.
There you go. All right. So let's go around the room quickly and ask this challenging question. Your favorite song to play in a music game? One. Loki.
My favorite song in this, because I was inspired to actually make a version of it before I actually heard the real version, it was in DJ Hero 2. I can't remember if it was 2 or 1. It was Shout versus Piano.
That is a great song. DJ Hero is so criminally underrated. And anytime that game comes up, I think we, because people kind of swept it under the rug with the Guitar Hero deluge that came in that same year where the marketplace was flooded. But like DJ Hero was different, and it was like the songs are so good.
Yeah,
I'm with you there. I love the Radio Gaga by Queen and Mary J. Blige's All of Me. Like that remix is so flipping good. So Dark Soccer, if you had to pick one song.
Gotcha Manota in pop and music, because I can sing along with it.
But that's also like, isn't that still like your favorite
anime? It is my favorite anime ever. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I have it in a Bimani game that I get to just punch bubbles with makes me feel giddy. I'm still not all that great at pop and music, but fuck, I'll play that song all day.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, now it's me, and I don't know. This question is like so hard. I'm going to say this. I was going to go with a DDR song, but I really think my favorite song to play ever in a music game was Akumajo Dracula Medley from Keyboard Mania. Because, A, that means I'm playing Keyboard Mania, and may that game rest in peace, because I love that game. And just something about like being able to actually play like all those fantastic like Castlevania songs, and you're actually like playing them on the keyboard, especially if you're playing like real mode, which I was able to do back in the day, play like the full thing with the weird synthesizer wheel that does the screams like, and all that. I loved playing that song, so I think that's my answer.
I'd say a close second for me, which also is not a music game, but it Rez, and that would be Buggy Running Beats. Yeah, that song, every time I hear it, it's just like, yeah, that song's so good.
Yeah, that's a song I have to have in my car to drive fast to. It really is.
I also very much like Heaven is a Metallic 57 Gray in Dance Maniacs.
That's a great one.
It's just a fun one. That's all.
I almost said, since we're all doing two after all, apparently.
Yep.
I almost said Ghosts from DDR Max. Like,
that's still on my playlist.
I can't go buy a DDR Max machine and like not, and which are kind of rare anymore, because this song was only on. No, I think it is on Max 2, isn't
no.
it?
No.
No, it isn't?
No.
I thought it was.
Okay, you're thinking well, So Deep. So Deep was on both, okay. I think.
So yeah, like if I actually maybe see a Max 1 machine, I have to play Ghosts. That song is just so fucking good. Like,
And damn it, Vincent D'Amour, why don't you make more music?
There's some random CD of his on iTunes. Yeah, Vincent D'Amour, I like Flotation's like still probably my favorite, one of my favorite 2DX songs they ever did. So anyway, memories. Love it, love it. And I gotta give fair shout out to Kyle, too. You know, because honestly, like, and I played it during the break here if you're listening live, but Banzai's Anubis is a great song. So.
As a Zodiac.
Yes. All right. Let's go into some more news. Loki.
All right. So I guess this is the conclusion to... I guess we've been kind of slowly going this direction for a while now, but guess what? The Ouya is available for purchase. The company, that is. They are looking for somebody to take the company off their hands. And I guess maybe just because the console didn't really have wide success. But it's sad. So, yeah, they are seeking a buyer right now. And apparently that they're in a pretty big debt right now. And I guess even after they just had some recent investment of like another $10 million, they just still can't keep the company running.
So what went wrong?
Well, one of the little snippets they had here is that apparently 73% of Ouya owners have not bought a game on the console.
Is that going back to the fact that I think a lot of people bought an Ouya to use as an emulator? And like, let's be real. I don't mean anything against indie developers who are hardworking on Ouya, because I do think that's great and I love that there is that platform. But most people bought their Ouya from the Kickstarter campaign to play Super Nintendo games.
Well, and true. And here's the thing. It's like the Ouya was a neat idea at first, like an Android console and stuff. But look how fast technology upgrades. Like, there's new phones coming out every goddamn year. And their original plan was, oh, yeah, we're going to be able to stick this on this chip. And it's going to be able to, you know, you'll be able to upgrade the card in your Ouya every year if you really want to do that. And they just never followed through with it. And it's just, unfortunately, devices just got so much more powerful, and there's so much, so many better ways of doing it. And almost any phone nowadays, or tablet, or whatever you want to use, can sync to your TV if you really want to play on the TV. So it's kind of, it's not needed anymore. There's just better ways to do everything it can do. It's sad. I mean, there's a really nice, you know, indie marketplace on there, but I'm hoping that that can maybe translate somewhere else. And after all, you know, they were talking about, you know, the Ouya. I know they, I think they have a marketplace on that. Was it the Codemasters? Not Codemasters. Mad Cats, their Mojo console or whatever. So they have that still available, I guess.
Looking at the chat room over at live.vognetwork.com, Dungeon Buster says Ouya was a solution to a problem that didn't really exist. You know, I just feel so bad, though, because, you know, I know Ouya's really been trying to do a lot for indie games. And when I do check out, like, what Ouya brings to different trade shows and stuff with a lot of the indie presence they have, I kind of go, you know, the industry needs this. Like, I like seeing these indie games and the things that are being made, but it's just...
But at the same time now, though, these other console platforms are becoming a little bit more open, and yeah, a lot of these games are coming to consoles anyway.
True.
And especially now, everybody's like, kind of, bring your indies to us. Bring indies. Mm-hmm. I think it's getting a lot easier to, you know, previously, it's like, to get on, you know, the Xbox, you had to be through the Xbox Indie program, and you're buried, you know, behind menus and stuff, and this is... You know, the first console that kind of brought all those indies to the forefront, but now it's kind of like, well, that problem's not really there anymore, or at least not to the extent it was before.
Gotcha. All right, well, let's talk about, speaking of emulating, there was a pretty big kind of story that a lot of people were checking out on Twitter for a couple days before it ended, and that is embedding classic games on Twitter. That's right. For a little bit, you were able to actually play these emulated MS-DOS games that were on the Internet Archive, because there's a lot of like emulated stuff that's on the Internet Archive that are very old games. Like, I know the first thing I went and checked out on there was The Island of Dr. Brain. You could actually play on the Internet Archive. So they have that. And you could actually embed these things into your tweet. You wouldn't be able to play them on the mobile phone, but you can play them on the browser if you're sitting looking at Twitter on your computer. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you feel about this scenario, Twitter disabled it almost as fast as it was enabled. It was probably only working for a good 48 hours. And Twitter actually mentioned in their terms and conditions, do not build end-to-end interactive experiences inside the video or audio player unrelated to player card content, such as the following: purchasing, gaming, polling, messaging, and data entry. Instead, build these interactive experiences with other card types or enhance your player card content with links to your website or mobile application. So Twitter just didn't want that all on their site. And I can understand it puts them in a really strange area legally as well. So maybe Twitter just didn't want any piece of that. But unfortunately, this means Bobby's going to have to cancel the project where Flappy Vog will be playable on Twitter. Unfortunately, that is going to have to be scrapped. I'm kidding. Bobby's going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm kidding. All right. You still can, of course, check out the Internet Archive to check out that archive of games. That is available at archive.org. Do remember that many old games are purchasable on sites like GOG.com. So if you do really, really like a game, you should check it out. But if the game isn't on GOG.com and it's nowhere else for sale, I guess the Internet Archive is the only place to do it, then that's what you got to do. So there you go. Dark Soccer, what do you have for us?
I blame Shane.
Uh-oh.
Shane.
What do you do now?
I got to work on Friday. And next thing I know, I get this message from Shane. Have you seen this? It's Ukulele. They're nearing $1 million. I'm like, Ukulele what? Did they misspell Ukulele? But Ukulele is it's a platformer that's being developed by Playtonic. And its goal was $270,000. At the time that this came out on May 1st, they hit $920,000. It was still going up. Playtonic is made of some rare folks, including Charles Sutherland, Gavin Price, Steve, is it Males or Miles? Anyway, just a bunch of folks who worked on Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong Country. So this is supposed to be a spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie. It's a 3D platformer, and it involves a green lizard guy named Yuka, and Laylee, who is a lady bat, on his head. So it should be being developed for consoles and PC, and has an approximate release date of sometime October 2016.
Boy, they just blew through all those stretch goals right out the gate, too. My God. Like, they had to, like, invent things. I mean, they made that $1 million so fast, they had to really invent new ones. And this thing isn't even close to being done yet.
They had to invent new dollars.
New stretch goals for these dollars. Yeah, new dollars.
I'm actually double-checking to see where it is right now, but the Kickstarter's loading really slow for me.
I thought last I looked it was, like, 1.5 million pounds, I think.
Well, it hasn't remotely loaded for me, so it's got so much attention. The site is broken. You all broke Kickstarter with your ukuleles.
But that should send a pretty strong message. Like, this is the game a lot of people have been waiting for.
Change.org, bring back Rare.
Well, and
okay, they are almost at 2 million.
Oh my gosh,
they're at $1,987,490. $1,987,499.
Wow.
So, damn.
Wait, is that dollars that you're reading?
In dollars, U.S. dollars.
Okay, and that translates to a different amount in pounds. But still, no. I mean, that's an amazing amount of money. We're going to see, like, exploding kittens.
And even the style looks old school Rare. Mm-hmm. So.
Anyway.
Do the thing.
Dungeon Buster in chat says no one expected Mighty Number 9 to get a retail version, but Deep Silver stepped in to do it. Yeah, that was actually on deck, one of the other stories we're going to talk about tonight, but we had to cut some stories tonight for time. But I mean, that's a huge
there was another game that blew through its goal like that too. And that was the Homestuck game, Hivebent. It topped over 2 million.
Oh yeah, because Homestuck fans are crazy.
Yes. Yes, we are. That's why you can never spell the word update without the number 8.
All right. ACDEF says it's about 1.3 million pounds. He's looking at it in pounds right now. So there you go. Excellent. Well, believe it or not, that's going to do it for the news tonight. But I will, like, if you want to talk about something on the phones that maybe we didn't get to during the news segment tonight, you can certainly bring that up. Like, maybe you want to talk more about Mighty Number 9 or something else that we missed. You can certainly bring that up. However, before we get to calls, I want to get to our emailers, because every week you can email us. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to participate. And
you don't want to email us.
Oh, come on.
I'm kidding. Yes, you do.
Where every gamer has a voice. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com.
And their voice is mine.
Darksoccer is going to steal your voice and make them hers, like she's Ursula, the witch.
I'm not divine. I can't even do the Pat Carroll voice, you know.
Poor unfortunate souls.
Poor unfortunate souls.
So this one starts from Robert M. I finally bought Don't Starve now that I've upgraded my OS from Snow Leopard to Yosemite. Breathe.
Some people have to run a little behind. It happens.
When I start up the game in Steam, it shows me the CD keys to enter. I haven't been prompted in game to enter these keys. Any idea what this is about?
There's a lot of different games that do that. Like, for example, actually, I can't remember an example, but I've had somewhere they ask me about, you know, CD keys and stuff. Sometimes you need to, sometimes you don't. If it doesn't ask you for them and the game runs fine, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I think that's just more to, like, protect you in case maybe you have, like, a reinstallation or something where you try to do the game again and then you need the key. I think that's just kind of to protect you. So you don't always need it on Steam.
Yeah, I want to say maybe Grand Theft Auto 4 that I installed digitally, because I bought it a second time on my laptop and because I tied it with Steam because I had the disc version at one time, but that wasn't Steam-enabled.
Also, since I know Sky has Minecraft on PS4, have you, he means me, checked out the Mass Effect pack yet? Interesting that it's a PlayStation exclusive, considering. No, because I don't play Minecraft on consoles.
I didn't think it was a PlayStation exclusive.
I didn't think it was PlayStation exclusive either. I thought
No, that came out on Xbox 360.
And on top of that, a whole bunch of people have made, like, their own versions anyway, so yeah. It doesn't matter.
They're asking a little too much money for it, for me, for just some skins that doesn't really alter the game. Now, and I could be wrong, so this is why we have a live chat room, so educate me, chat room. Does it come with, like, maps? Like, does it come with different worlds?
It comes with a map.
Does it?
Yeah, it's the Normandy.
Well, now that might be kind of cool to check out, but You know, again, it's like – I think it's like $4.99 or something. Like, it's just – it feels a little heavy on the cost for what you really get. So that's my thoughts on it.
P.S. Shane, am I crazy? Does Kyoruger / Dino Charge not have a Yellow Ranger? Shane's not here. Next question. That came from Robert M.
I might get a text if he didn't already go to bed. We'll see.
Shane should be in bed. He works early. this one's called OMG, the mailbag was empty. Hey, Orange Lounge. The mailbag was empty. Now I'm crying and emailing while listening to the last 30 minutes of the podcast. FUs of the week, exclamation points a lot. I've been very interested in visiting the West Coast lately. I really want to see some whales. Is that Shane?
Darkstalker heard the phone vibrating on my desk all the way over there. I think autocorrect got him. He says, not now yellow, but there is gold. I think he meant to say not yellow, but there is gold.
Okay, so you have your answer.
There you go.
Whatever. Shane, you were supposed to come over today and watch Ninjinger with me.
William Murderface is backing that up, too. Does not have yellow. It has gold and graphite, which is kind of strange.
I'm upset that I didn't get to watch any this morning.
Are they all like Crayola colors now?
Whatever. They're anyway, awesome.
Back to the email.
I've been very interested in visiting the West Coast lately. I really want to see some whales. I really want to ocean fish for some shark. You actually get really good shark out of the Gulf Coast. Just saying. I really want to meet some of the producers, podcasters, YouTubers I've been watching and listening to for years. I really want to avoid California stuck-ups and hang where there are friendly, nice people. I want to see some glaciers and go on some crazy hiking trails. Okay. Would the area of Cali you guys are located suit me for all of the listed activities? What do you see when you look out the window, lol? I'm going to tell you this. Being a person who is relocated from the South, from humid, I'm going to steal a line from my friend in Australia and say that Sacramento is Satan's butthole in the summer. It's basically a huge bowl here, a valley, that acts like a convection oven and has no water. Sacramento, it's a nice central place in the middle of all the awesome stuff that surrounds it. That being said, you can go from Sacramento to the awesome places and live cheaper here and still be close to the awesome places.
Yeah.
Plus, I live here, and that's awesome.
Yeah. I would say I love Sacramento. It's a great city. And you know, there's a lot of really cool things that are happening more and more here, which is great. But I would say for people, like, if you've never been to the West Coast, Sacramento's not really the place to start. Like, I love Seattle personally. But I think a lot of maybe what you want to look for, maybe the Bay Area, especially like San Francisco, San Jose. You can do a lot over there.
If you're looking in SoCal, do not go to L.A. Go to San Diego.
Although, do go to Anaheim so you can go to Disneyland.
Well, yeah, go to Anaheim because, I mean, please. But go to San Diego, and if you can afford it, stay at that bed and breakfast at Coronado. It's really nice. Really, really nice.
I will say this much. If you want to, like, meet people and so forth, look out for, like, a convention or something that's going to happen out here.
Don't go to Anime Expo.
Well, I know.
Go to Fanime.
Fanime is a good one.
Go to YaoiCon.
I will say... also, GamerX is going to be one that we are heavily involved with, or as they're calling it now, GX. And I really can't emphasize this enough, and I wish I didn't have to, but just so we're clear, you don't have to be gay to go to GX or GamerX. Like, it's just about, like, celebrating that diversity and having that openness to just be whoever the bleep you want to be. And we had Matt
had
on
a great time cosplaying.
Yeah, we had Matt on a previous episode of the show, and if you want to hear more about that, you can download that episode. But like for me, that's what GX is about. Is just like, this is a safe place where people are not going to be called names like they are sometimes on Xbox Live. You just are going to do what you like and be who you want, and that's that. And I always had a good time, and so I'll be there. I'm pretty sure Dark Saga will be there. Floki can get away. He'll, no,
did you say Floki?
If Loki.
Oh.
I will not be there, funny. Probably.
No.
I need to dust off my costume and get it ready, because I'm probably going to cosplay Jane again, just because I love that costume. It was fun. And it was comfortable. Oh, my God. That was the most comfortable costume I've ever had. I found my bike-in costume. Oh, my God. When I had the boob window, and Dan hates that outfit because of all the exposure, but my bike-in costume was great from Guilty Gear. too short to be a proper bikin.
All right, next email.
There's more to this one, Rob. Oh, how dare you dismiss poor EA Skeezy?
I thought it was done. Sorry.
I hope you guys are doing well. Much love, EA Skeezy.
Thank you, next email.
Girl. This one's called Ginger Farts.
Must be from Radiator.
Yes. Hi, Pepper, Thyme, and Mint. Wait, wrong show. Seriously, though. Hi, OLR. I just thought that I'd ask a few PC gaming questions, seeing as many of us are PC gamers to one extent or another. First off, what drew you to PC gaming exactly? My hand being FUBAR.
Wait, say that. What was the question
What
again?
Drew you to PC gaming exactly?
And
Final Fantasy XI.
Yeah, a lot of experiences that simply don't exist on console, like World of Warcraft.
Well, remember StarCraft. I was playing Final Fantasy XI with a controller and pulling off all my macros.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty damn good with my macros that way. And then I was like, okay, this sucks. And then I hurt my hand.
PC gaming, especially in about 10 years ago, was always a little bit of a step ahead of the consoles, I think, as well, when it came to, like, you know, the graphics and the sound and so forth. You know, now it really depends on the specs that you're running. You know, some very high-end PC gamers would say, oh, you still get the best experience on PC. But I would say, well, not everybody has the money to bling out their computer like that. So for some people,
liquid cooling system.
Yeah, you actually get pretty good support on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One at this point. But, you know, as far as PC is concerned, also I like the fact that it's open-ended so much so that anybody can just put something out there. They can put a file on the internet, you can download it and play it on your PC. There's no middle person. And I think at the end of the day, that's ultimately what makes PC gaming awesome, is that it's such an open platform. You can do what you want. Loki, I don't know if you have something you want to add?
Shareware. That's what got me in the PC game. Well, actually, back in the day, it was just like, you know, you had console stuff, but then PC, like, there's, you know, Wolfenstein. True. I mean, you can't do that on Nintendo.
You know. I think they tried on Super Nintendo, didn't
yeah.
they?
Well, yeah, they did. But, like, I mean, at the time...
on Super Nintendo was hilarious.
It was like Wolfenstein. I remember we were just at, like, a CompUSA, and there's someone playing that. I was like, whoa, that's so, like, fast. You know, they're playing a high-end, like, 386 computer.
ZZT is the reason I PC game.
386-20, that's right.
Playing MUDs.
My computer ran at 20 megahertz.
The first PC game I ever played was... Fucking hell, what was it? Well, I remember my first MMO, though keep in mind it had to be text-based, but it was Gemstone 3 on AOL when you paid by the hour. That was awful. More?
Yeah.
Modding, resolution, sales, something else. Dude, we're so much older than that. We're cooler kids than that. Furthermore, is there anything about PC gaming that you don't particularly like? People? Please give reasons why for both questions. I don't like people, but yet I play an MMO. Isn't it ironic?
I think it's that spec thing I talked about earlier, is that because there isn't a baseline, things will run completely differently over here than they do over here. And sometimes that can be a very tricky, like, trying to balance the game. So you get games that run at a, like... Luckily, I have a new computer, and I was fortunate enough to get one. But, like, running on my old computer, it's like some games would be just too jaggy to really play. And it's like, technically, it's playable, but it just frame skips all over the place. So it can kind of be expensive to stay on top of things and have your games run optimum, would be my thought on that.
Remember, sitting down on your butt doesn't qualify as being on crack.
Wow.
Did you really put that in an email?
I think so.
I'm completely closing down all the emails now. I will not be taking any more emails for the duration of this week.
All right. Participate at orangeloungetrader.com. Make Dark Side Hard work next Sunday. There it is.
By the way, may I make a very sad announcement?
Okay.
And I have to thank Brad for bringing this to my attention. Mm. But the lady that played Yeoman Rand on Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. I saw you post that in chat.
She died. Mm. Very sad. And I'm saying her name is Grace Lee Whitney, but I'm telling everyone who she played because that's how people would know her.
Of course.
So, very sadness.
Very sad.
We have lost too many people already in 2015.
Yeah, fuck 2015.
Fuck it in the ear.
Boy, that sadness turns to rage real quick, doesn't it? So you know what that time it is now. Oh, this is-
back. Here is justice. Here is punishment. Here. This is fucked up.
Fuck this month already, even though we're 3 days into it. Just really the last week has been a very difficult week. So is the week before, now that I think about it, but just really aggravating that people don't seem to realize that people have concerns outside of places like work and games. People are out there living an actual real life, and sometimes there are things that are a little bit more pressing than the everyday grind. So, that being said, I did get good news that my granny is on her way home today. She actually should be home now. My last remaining grandparent is not doing all that great, but send her a lot of love, a lot of support. And also, fuck not having pie at home. I have more pie.
Loki.
Just fuck April. Thank God we're done with it.
Fair enough. My IP of the week just goes to uncertainty. I have a lot of uncertainty going on right now, and I need to get some things resolved. And then all will be better. And I'll be saying thank you instead of fuck you. All right. I'll be saying thank you to those of you guys that want to call us right now. We're going to open up the Skype line right now at 1-877-GAME-OLR or our username on Skype, Orange Lounge Radio, all one word, if you have something you want to talk about. If there's a news story maybe we didn't get to tonight that you want to talk about, you want to bring up, you can do that. Or maybe Kyle said something in the interview you want to revisit a little bit here, even though he's not here. Maybe there was a topic you wanted to discuss a little further with us. You can do that. Orange Lounge Radio on Skype, all one word. Or our telephone number, 1-877-GAME-OLR. While we wait for a call, let me ask Loki if there's another story he wants to tackle here real quick.
Sure, since they talked about the HoloLens stuff at Microsoft's little press conference there, one of the things that came out of that, like most platforms, Unity is going to be supporting HoloLens, and those development tools will be available free whenever that happens. So that's neat. I'm a little disappointed based off of some of the feedback of people actually tried those dev kits and how HoloLens seems to be working with a very limited field of view. That sounds kind of disappointing.
I'm willing to cut it a little slack because it's still so early. So true. Maybe things will change.
But
you know?
Just like what they've shown us, though, like the demonstrations where you're like kind of surrounded by things, it's just not like that. It's still a neat idea. I just think the technology, maybe the second iteration will be a lot better.
Yeah. I wanted to mention this at some point tonight because I think this is awesome news, and that is that they actually did another update to Mario Kart 8. This is very minor, though. It's only going to update the game to version 4.1, and it's just like a bug-squashing patch, and they talk about that they have improved the overall gameplay experience, which means, you know, they probably patched out some bugs and did some things. But more importantly, 200cc and mirror mode immediately unlocked now. So you do not have to get like stars on everything in 150cc to play 200cc, because those that have played 200cc in Mario Kart will tell you it's a whole different game when it's that fast. It's like it's like playing F-Zero or something. Actually, nothing will really top playing actual F-Zero, but it's so different. Like, you really have to nail those turns and actually use your brake and all that stuff, and it's fast, but it's a lot of fun. So I'm happy to see that minor update went in. That's very cool. I'm going to just do one more call for calls. Maybe nobody wants to try to follow Kyle tonight, which I would completely understand after that great interview we had. But we'll see. I'll give it one more shout out. But after this, I'm going to close it up. So let's check in with another couple quick stories here, Loki.
Okay. There's going to be another update to the Xbox 360, which is going to allow for larger external hard drives, up to 2 terabytes. So that's going to be pretty good for all your game storage needs, since Xbox 360 games aren't that large.
Since there's probably likely to be like digital clearance, if that is happening, that you're going to be able to stock up digital.
Get all of your games with gold downloaded at one time. You know, yeah. So that's pretty awesome. You'll be able to see your purchase history. They're going to have an update to that. You reset your password as well. And you'll be able to see your money, your Microsoft account balance will now appear in the top right corner of the Xbox dashboard. If you want to set that to appear. Another thing is you can also get some more detailed network statistics as well.
Well, I'm glad they're still supporting the 360 with, you know, pretty major updates like that.
That's, I keep downloading all the, or marking all the games of gold to download, so maybe I just need to sit there and, you know.
I could hook up that external drive I have and then re-download Final Fantasy XI and enjoy the 6 months that's left or whatever on the 360.
You have to pay for the subscription, though.
Yeah, damn it. Damn it. I really wish Square would have, like, a one sub for both their games.
Too bad you can't just, like, buy, like, because usually, like, 11's, like, super cheap now. It's like you get a free month with it. Just buy, like, 30, you know, six copies of the game.
Right.
Probably cheaper than, you know, paying for 6 months.
If you're willing to start over every time. All right. Well, earlier this year, Namco Bandai had an April Fool's gag about a crossover between Galaga and Tekken. And everybody went, oh, isn't that a cute April Fool's gag? But actually, it's real. That's right. Galaga cross Tekken. At least that's the working title. I mean, there's no actual title, but I like that actually a lot as a title. It's going to be released to celebrate Tekken's 20th anniversary. It's going to be released on iOS. It's going to be exclusive to that platform and will be free starting April 30th, but only in Japan so far. So that means it's out this week in Japan, but I haven't heard a word about if it's available in the U.S., so you might have to search for that on the phone. And yeah, so you actually play as Heihachi and you shoot down other fighters. That's awesome. So you can check that out, Dark Sakura, Galaga Cross Tekken or whatever they call it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So there it is. Well, all right. I asked, I said, call in. Nobody called, but you know what? We're way past closing time anyway. It's almost 9:30 here on the West. Midnight 30, as I say, on the East Coast. So I think it is about time to wrap up the show and head out for the night. I want to thank you guys all for listening and downloading Orange Lounge Radio and supporting independent broadcasting and podcasting. This, you guys are the reason why this show exists after all these years. And yes, we're still here. If you like what you heard here, tell a friend or two about the show and help spread the word. That's all. You know, we don't have advertising dollars and big magazines and websites to back us up. We just have each other. A nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes or Stitcher Radio goes an awful long way. So please consider your support in that way as well. It's been a long time since we've had a review on either one of those sites. So I'd really appreciate it if you have a chance this week. If not, no big deal. Just help spread the word. And thanks for downloading and listening. That's the most important thing. I want to really, really, really thank Kyle Ward for going way over time tonight. I know he was prepared to do it, but, you know, still, to actually have spent an hour and a half with him, literally catching up over the past 10 years, was an absolute treat. And really, he was a good half to two-thirds of the show tonight. So I just really appreciate him taking the time out and being on our show tonight. So I would just want to give one more shout-out for ReRave Plus and Ditto Beat. If you have an Android device, they're free. So what's stopping you? Go check it out.
I have a Samsung Galaxy 2 or S2. That's what's stopping me.
Oh, an older one. Well, I'll get Alan to download it on his phone for sure.
So I download that and be like, sorry, I won't even download this.
Well, time to upgrade your phone. That's and Kyle was talking about that. You know, do you want to really?
I need to. I was gonna get maybe an S6, but they're really expensive when you're out of like a contract. So you know, I don't know if I want to drop $700 on that or spend the extra money on a PC.
Problems. I understand. All right, let's go around and get everybody's final thoughts for the night. Dark Sakura, your final thought tonight.
Did you know that the human brain has actually shrunk over the last several thousand years by about the size of a tennis ball, but the theory is that the brain is being rewired to where we think faster and can process data more quickly?
Is that why I forget shit all the time?
You completely disproved my theory.
But I do. In fact, I forgot what you just said.
And then blue eyes are a genetic mutation.
Awesome. My final thought tonight is I'm really excited, you guys. I know some of you won't care, but deal with it. I'm really excited because next Saturday I have meet and greet tickets for Drop Dead Gorgeous in San Francisco, and I get to meet Jinx Monsoon and Ben De La Creme. I'm so very excited. So those of you that watch The Old Race will know why that's exciting. Last but not least, Loki.
So, yeah, what I need to do is finish my game so I can start selling it to make a little extra money so I can buy these things that I need. Because technically that would be for, you know, game development purchases, you know, purposes. New phone to test on, you know, new PC to test on.
Look out, because then if the game does well, it'll take over your life. But I guess That may not be such be your own boss.
Yes, I would love that. Not have to go to my day job and be able to sit home and program. Yes, that would be so terrible. Please. Right. Oh, I hate to do that.
All right. That's going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. We will be back next week with an all-new episode. And yes, we are inching closer and closer to episode number 600 is on the horizon. And we'll be there very soon, as well as our 13th anniversary show, if you can believe it. Lucky 13. Our show is turning into a teenager. Whew. Until then, 7 more days, and we'll see you again. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vog Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.